Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining is just Bree for now. Bree, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Yeah.
All you got for me?
I was trying to think of what I've done in the last week other than play video games and, like, you know, change my name in places. That's the most excitement I've had.
Oh, yeah. The whole getting married and changing your name everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole process. I had to drive like an hour to my nearest bank branch. It was a huge to-do.
Ugh.
Right. Yeah.
Well, did you drive in the country or in a city?
A little bit of both.
Was it a treacherous city?
Maybe a little bit.
Were there some beatdowns in that city?
I definitely had to survive.
We're terrible at segues. Joining us from New Challenger. Joining us once again from New Challenger, we have Sean Alexander Allen joining us to chat about Beatdown City Survivors. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, it's like kind of riding the high off of, I mean, it's like a little over a week since the game dropped, so.
For the people who don't know what it is, give us the quick elevator pitch. What is Beatdown City Survivors?
Yeah, so Beatdown City Survivor, I guess it's a few things, but like what I like to say, I don't know, there's always like the if you like Vampire Survivors, it's like that but completely different. in that like it's a lot of what I think of, I don't know, there's a lot of references, and it's like, I say it's less like a Survivor's game and more like Dead Rising, and that it has like immersive sim and like sandbox elements where you're walking around a city that's procedurally generated, you're fighting hordes of zombies and roaches and rats, and you can light all sorts of, you can... Like, it has kind of had as a whole fluids and liquid system where gasoline ignites to be with fire, and like electricity can ignite it. Electricity can electrify water. Water can clear toxic waste. Toxic waste will poison you. And you can break everything in the environment, like cars, traffic lights, etc. And yeah, it's just this game where you're fighting more, bigger and bigger hordes until the 20 minutes. And then a boss comes, and then you got to fight the boss, and then you upgrade your house. I'm doing a terrible job at the elevator pitch. I feel like the game's description has just been blown out of my brain. Like having like, I don't know, this last week's just been like, it was like a big like release, and then like all of a sudden I start to sort of forget things that I've been literally repeating for over a year.
Jeez, how long have you been working on this one? Because you were on a few years ago to talk about Treachery and Beatdown City.
Yeah, not like we've been working on a few things. Not a lot of it was catching traction, although there's a lot of interest. But for one reason or another, so in 2024, I was like, all right, let's just see if this liquid system works. Let's see if like having lots of zombies on the screen and all fighting, like let's do kind of a Survivor's thing with just like, let's put like water and sludge and gasoline and blood and stuff like that on the ground. And let's see if that works. And it was very bright and very, like, it didn't look like anything. We used just a lot of old sprites and everything, and from Treachery Beatdown City, except that the zombies had to bite and the skeleton enemies had to throw bones. So, you know, we did a little bit of work, and the game was very fun. So we, like, worked for 3 months to make a demo to send out for pitching. So it's 3 months in 2024, and then we got a green light around the end of 2025 that we were going to get money. So we started back up like January 2025 and went all that year, and then to June of this year. So a year and 9 months, which is not that long. It's not the shortest not thing, but yeah.
Especially when games these days could take, you know, 5-6 years to get out anymore.
Yeah, I definitely used, the thing was, is there was a, you know, scope, right? Everyone wants you to do everything for less. So I basically scoped out as, maybe not as little as I could do it for, but I scoped out like an amount, and then we were given a budget that I think was under what we needed. So then I was like, okay, well, and it's me and a programmer primarily. At some point we hired a pixel artist for a little bit. All the music in the game is fully licensed, so all of those artists get paid for their music. It's not a lot because we are friends. You know, I made friends with a lot of these people. It's what I've been told is that like people will charge a lot if it's like a commercial thing that they don't care about, but if they like you, it doesn't cost anywhere near as much.
I've been lucky to run into friend discounts with music on this show in the past. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, and also it was like a lot of building relationships. Like a lot of these people are just like, I'm fans, and although there's pieces where, which we can get into later, but like Kenny Siegel, one of the producers on the game, he had already played Treachery Beatdown City when I met him, and he liked the game. So that actually made that intro very easy. So, year and 9 months. The thing is, I'm also Zalavir Nelson Jr., who's, runs Strange Scaffold, who does like El Paso Elsewhere. Mm-hmm. He's a very close friend of mine. Also, we talk about business a lot, and as I watched budgets shrink, I started pitching more and more like him because I was like, all right, well, Zalavir is able to get stuff done. So, I'm gonna pitch within like this sort of unreasonable, but still fairly reasonable time frame.
And it seems to have worked out. And, also, things have worked out with our co-hosts. Aki and Jacob both showed up. How are you two doing? Hey.
I'm doing okay. I just finished watching the Three Stooges movie with my kids.
My vote was that you were busy with your family or packing. So I'm going to take a win on that one.
Yeah, busy with family.
And Aki, so. Anime was my guess.
No, I'm not feeling good today. I've been in and out of the bathroom, upchucking and other stuff. So
yeah, we don't need to. It's Jacob's territory. So. You gotta leave that for him. Jacob and Aki, have you two gotten your hands on Beatdown City Survivors?
Yes, Jacob. I have. I've played quite a bit.
Me too. Like. This was one of those games where I was like, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to install it, I'm going to play it for like 10-15 minutes, get a feel for it, take a break, get some other work done, come back to it, and like really invest time into it. When I sat down, that 10 minutes turned into like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it really does become like this weird time sink, and like especially with trying to figure out how everything gets done, because the game gives these instructions for stuff, but of course they're kind of nebulous and almost, I don't want to say like a riddle, but one of my interview questions is going to be, how the hell do you turn on the elevator?
Well, go ahead, ask.
How the hell do you turn on the elevator? This thing's ridiculous. I've wandered all over the city. I've wandered all over the map. I've gotten all these different survivors, and meanwhile, I can't find any elevator I'm supposed to shove a power cell into.
You beat the first boss, like the first actual boss.
You mean like the guy who like drips? Like
no, he's a mid boss.
The 20 like, minute boss on the first.
You
stage.
Beat the 20 minute boss, yeah. Like the boss, the guy who ends the stage when you beat him. he drops the cell and then you just go to the...
So I wasn't already in possession of it. Okay. No. Well...
Get good, Scrub. I almost got good. I had him to about halfway health, and then out of nowhere, like, my health just went down completely. I don't know what attack it was, but he just, like, two-shotted me.
I got the other day, because I was riffing a little bit too much, because I was like, I got him. He's almost dead, and then he last attacked, like, took me out, and I was like, oh, great. but, yeah, I don't know. He's, there's a lot of systems in the game, and I don't know, we're...
I'm trying to remember the name of the guy who I've started using. It's one of, like, the, one of the music artists that's on there. And also, I don't even know how I unlocked him. I assume it's time-based.
There's little missions. They're all at the PC. You can look at them if you want to. What does the guy look like?
I'm trying to actually bring up the game on my PC right now so I could.
I'm proud of you. You are so prepared.
It's like, it's all right. So if you're looking at the character list,
yeah.
Okay. Bottom left. I think his name begins with a P.
Primrock.
I think so.
Yeah, with the beanie.
My vision's not the best, so
He's got like a green hat, like an kind of orangish shirt.
We are the blindest show on the internet, I believe.
Yeah, it does seem like that, doesn't it?
Well, I think the only musician with a P in his name is Primrock.
Yeah, I think you are correct on that one. Now I'm just trying to figure out how the hell.
Yeah, Primrock's the one who raps over the title menu. Which,
what are some of the artists that you got involved in the soundtrack for this? You mentioned a lot of them were friends. Let's hear some names. Who did you get involved in this, and what kind of features did you get? Are there any artists that you wanted to get that you weren't able to?
When we were playing, when I was playing the game, I was like, okay, what do we do for the soundtrack? And, you know, I could have gone the, like, I'm going to pay someone X amount of dollars to make me music. And then I just started, there were some albums that had, there was an album I missed, another album that had just come out that I was like, let me just listen to these albums while I'm playing the game. And one of the albums was called He Left Nothing for the Swimback. It's Sketch 185 is the vocalist, and Jeff Marquis is the producer. There's also a bunch of people that are featured on the track. So so we licensed three full albums.
Wow. And
the thing about it is that these albums, the artists like Sketch 185 and then Shrapnel is the other artist. They're a group. It's Primrock and Curly Castro with the producer Controller 7. Also, it's kind of funny because like Open Mike Eagle, who I've already worked with before, he is a feature on at least two of the albums. so he's on a feature on Shrapnel's album also. And then later on, this album called Genuine Dexterity by this rapper, his name is Kiki C, but he goes by KVI with like question marks behind it. And it's him as the vocalist and Kenny Siegel as the producer. And that just came out in the winter. And I was like, oh, I need this album too. Like I was just, and I was literally in the process of moving to Chicago, and I came up to see Kenny Siegel support another artist on tour, and I was like, yo man, I really want to license this album. He was like, oh yeah, Sean, yeah, sure, but what do you need? And like Sketch, I had coffee with one day, and I was like, after kind of talking with him at a few shows, I'd been kind of telling people, hey, this is my vision for the future, like I really want to get more underground hip-hop in these games. So yeah, He Left Nothing for the Swimback, Nobody Planning to Leave is Shrapnel and Controller 7, and then Genuine Dexterity is KVI and Kenny Siegel, which Open Mike Eagle and other artists are also on. And then there's artists that are a part of that record label that I also just like talked to. I was like, hey, do you want to be in a video game? And like Billy Woods is the head of the record label, and I didn't know this at the time, but like I've really just been into, he has a song called Duck Hunt, which I don't know, it's just tremendous song with like trumpets in it and everything, like a lucid, amazing lyricist. Him and Billy Woods together are a rap group called Arm & Hammer. They had an album last year with the producer The Alchemist with a song called Super Nintendo, which had a very experimental, like this kind of MIDI sounding, like, again, it's like experimental for like, I don't know, a big name producer to have like this very like almost Zelda dungeony like theme for a beat. And the song was very much about like, what was happening outside while you were inside playing Super Nintendo, like all the rough stuff. And I'm like, and I really, it spoke to me because that was definitely my upbringing, like 80s New York, 90s New York, like was rough outside, nicer inside with game consoles and Legos and drawing and whatever. And so I was like, yeah, y'all want to be in this because like they're two of my favorite artists. And we're still talking to more people to put more people in the game. And then also we added Open Mike Eagle. I asked him, I was like, hey man, do you want to be yourself or do you want to be like the Stereohead version of you? And he was like, Stereohead.
I've apparently unlocked him.
Yeah, he's OP. Also, I made a lot of the rappers. I don't know. Like, I made all the characters.
I was going to say, I was getting almost nowhere until I unlocked Primrock. And then I just started annihilating just about everybody.
He's
apparently he's also Curly Castro.
Curly Castro, yeah. Yeah, Curly Castro and Primrock together. Yeah, it's interesting because like me and my programmer talk about this again, it's like a week out and saying, oh, there's always this argument. It's like, is Lisa weak? And I've had to emphatically say no. The thing is, it's like remembering to use your skill. And then also, one of the very key things about the game is the passive upgrades, right? Like, the passive upgrades, you might have to change. You can't necessarily do what you want with someone, if that makes sense. Like, Bruce has lower health, and he's faster, so you might want to give him more armor, versus Brad, who's slower, where you might want to give him more speed. You don't necessarily need to do as much armor. There's Cobra, who unlocks as kind of our secret, our like easy character, quote unquote. But he's actually very hard in the later runs when things get overwhelmed, unless you give him a lot, you feed a lot of speed into him, or you go to the carts and buy a bunch of the hot sauce, which also gives speed, right? There's all these ways to tweak your character. And it's like, if you don't level up with intention, you might get hosed, like, absolutely. And I kind of accepted that a long time ago, and I was also like, well, that's what makes these characters interesting, is that you actually have to play to their strengths.
And there's a lot of characters in here, and there's some weird freaking characters in here. what are some of the most interesting characters that you snuck in here?
Well, I really like all the cats. We actually have another cat to add to the game. But like when we first added Pumpkin, people were just going nuts. Like we brought Pumpkin to PAX and people were just like obsessed. They were like, oh, I want to play this game with this really cute cat in it. And I really worked hard to make the cat cute. And we put Jimmy. A lot of the characters are playable, are enemies from like Treachery Beatdown City, because a lot of the thing about the game is that like Treachery Beatdown City was very much hell as other people, in a world where walking down the street and getting heckled is like the worst thing that can happen to you, or you know, cops can stop you, etc. In this world, most things are dead or monsters or whatever, so now it's like you got to partner up with these really obnoxious people to fight against the apocalypse, which often happens in these like zombie movies, right? Like the mashup of like personalities.
Hell will Jimmy, always still sorry. Be other people.
Exactly. Yeah even if they're, but like this time it's like, well, you need to work together. It's also very much inspired by the Key and Peele skit where they had these aliens and they were running around, and the aliens were tone deaf on race. So if the aliens were not racist, they were aliens. So they would stop a person And like they stop, like a black person comes up, like, hey, wait, we want to join you. And they're like, what is your feeling on the Police? They're like, I like their second album, and they shoot him. And he's an alien. But then they find a woman, and she's just like, I'm sorry, I don't have any money, blah, blah, blah. They're like, human. And they're like, what's your name? And she's like, Kelly. And they're like, of course it is. And that's why the achievement for Heather is, of course it is. Like, it's based directly on that. Like, because Heather beautiful. Is often
that's fantastic.
That same type of character. But yeah, like Jimmy, you find him in the park. He has a camera. And I made him basically like he doesn't have any strikes or anything. He's just like, this camera is a melee thing that's really... Like, I was like, again, is this weak? And I beat a run with him, like, not without too much difficulty. Well, difficulty, right? I had to pay attention to what I was doing. But he just has a camera where he just shoots in small bursts. And then his special skill is he shoots 360 in big bursts. But, and he was also inspired by Frank West from, like, Dead Rising. So, I don't know. Like, it's like these little kind of nods where we're, like, putting in bits to, like, nods to, like... Our game, zombie movies, you know, Cobra is very much wrestling. Like inspired by, yeah, Cobra. Cobra is like, he's a snake, right? Like the his achievement is call him Cobra, like instead of call him Snake, like Plissken. He's got like Kurt Russell hair, but like,
yeah, I was gonna say he reminded me of Roddy Piper from yep. From They Live.
So he's emerging. Because I love both of those movies. He uses the weapon. He uses the garbage can lid is what Snake Plissken uses when they make him fight in the wrestling ring against that big dude, towards the end of Escape from New York. This game is very inspired by this. I think a lot about like what would cause New York to become a prison. And I'm like, what else besides like disinvesting in everything and just like letting zombies roam the city, right? Like you could just like be like, well, the city's dead, so let's just sell it for scraps now. Like, let's make Manhattan a prison.
I mean, it works.
Yeah. But I also didn't even realize that this is a, I didn't even realize that this game's like a sequel to the Treachery and Beatdown City. Like, I'm pretty sure I have that game, and I honestly didn't even make the connection between them. Like, I mean,
is yeah, their names are similar, right?
Shut up.
But the game genre is 100% different. So it that's is. Like it is. Yeah, it is to. Yeah, just it's to call back, but yeah, it's a it is.
So, I mean, like, are we going to be seeing more adventures in this town or
potentially? I have a sequel in mind, but I won't really talk about it It won't be the same genre either, though.
Okay, that was actually going to be my question. Like, I realized, like, yeah, you can't talk about plot, but is it going to be? Yeah, so it's not the same genre. Yeah. So, romance simulator, got it.
Pigeon dating sim.
I mean, there already is a hatiful boyfriend, right?
Yeah,
that already exists.
There's a couple of them, I think.
That was like a big one. Didn't that one turn into they became the Fall Guys team, right? Yeah, they got bought and then like closed Media Molecule. Not Media Molecule, what was they called?
Mediatonic,
yeah. Man, it's weird to follow them for such a long time. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not averse to I have a few discussion like kind of like where you're talking with another person and a story is playing out for I've had these in my head for since college like all the genres in are in my brain but I've been like I Steam thinks I love Survivor's games now because I've been playing so many of them and I'm like I like five of them maybe I think a lot of them and I'm every time I play my game I'm like oh yeah cool like nobody did what we did at all whatsoever. A lot of our decisions are because I disagreed with how, because again, like I said, I think our game is more like visceral and closer to like Dead Rising than anything else. Honestly, Dead Rising also has the character like go up and And a lot of games have like the, oh, you can get fire trails behind you, but those fire trails don't light anything on fire. And I was always like, I was in a talk with, I think it was Warren Spector was giving a talk many years ago. And I was sitting there because I was working on Treachery and Beatdown City, which is a very focused, written, hard-coded game, right? Like, and Warren Spector was talking about how a fire should be fire, water should be water, doors should be doors, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, immersive sim stuff. And I remember sitting there being like, I don't agree. I love hard-coded story missions and everything. And then after coming off of a 60,000-word game with very focused path and everything, then, I don't know, it was like, it was looking at New York falling apart. Beatdown City Survivors is a lot about me, because I moved out of New York during the pandemic, so it's a lot about the pandemic. It's a lot about having to leave your own city, or not wanting to leave your own city, and the city wanting you to leave anyway, forcefully. It ended up being like, because like I see these videos of post Hurricane Sandy New York, where every time it rains a lot, like the subway systems flood, or toxic waste is coming out of the ground, and this and that. So I was like, well, what if we use that and make this like a system? So it was just the funniest thing, where it was like me kind of rebelling against my younger, more foolish self, I think, like, of, oh, code everything. And then I was like, actually, we're going to have very few words, and it's all going to be like a story told through systems.
I really do enjoy the fluid mechanic in this, although it drives me fucking crazy sometimes, where I'll be doing good and then all of a sudden I'm toxic. And I got to get rid of that. So I run to water and everything's going fine, but there's an air conditioner there, so it fucking freezes me. And then,
or you run into a lamppost and, immediately electrified.
And that lightning following you is kind of brutal.
Yeah. It's fun trying to outrun it.
Yeah. Dashing against the flame trails or electricity trails. I love it. I really enjoy how different this feels compared to so many other Survivors games. And you mentioned that you liked maybe like five of them. What are some of your highlights in the genre, and what makes you want to compete with them?
I didn't want to compete. I wanted to feel like I was just making something different. And like, initially I was just like, let's just do a thing. And that's when it started, because I'm never going to make anything like other stuff. So I had to think of, and then the liquid stuff came and I was like, oh yeah, we're making a completely different game. But, so Vampire Survivors, especially the Castlevania DLC, is one of my, still really good. I've loved that game forever. Again, it's interesting what they did. Like, they opened up a whole thing.
Kind of insane how much content they put in there too.
Yeah, I mean, when you make millions of dollars, it's like everyone's like, yo, what's co-op coming to Beatdown City Survivors? I'm like, it did not come to Vampire Survivors until 1 year after the game came out, after it had made well over $1 million. They decided what they were going to do. They could do whatever they wanted. They could have never done anything again. And instead, they just keep, putting more money in, and it keeps unlocking more money. So, good on them. You know, like, that's like, I think people don't seem to under, that's like the interesting thing about like competing against games, is that you're not even competing against the 1.0 of another game. You're competing against, especially if it's a very popular one, you're competing against 5 years later, right? Like, how much stuff it has. And again, that's why, I don't know, our game's stuff is, I was always like, is our game different, better, whatever? And I always found it to be my favorite one of the genre. I really love Death Must Die. It's only on PC. It's in early access. It has more of like a Diablo hack and slash vibe to it. And that's actually where I got the vibe of auto attacking as a base, like melee stuff close to you, except they do have people who throw arrows, like who shoot arrows, throw arrows. and they have like a tanky orc guy that I really like. It's been really fascinating to watch that balancing and watching the people every time they put a new biome in, watching the audience lose their shit. The guy has like a really good cadence with updates and people act like he disappeared off the face of the earth. And I'm pretty sure that has sold a million copies also.
I'm writing that one down. You said Death Must Die?
Death Must Die, yeah. It's a great game.
That one sounds really cool.
Feel very privileged. It's a game that, again, it has like dashing with fire trails behind you, except they don't do anything to the environment. And that was like, again, like these were like the things where I was like, yo, that's cool, except what if we, yeah, permanently
or it sets enemies on fire too.
It does set enemies on fire. It just doesn't.
And that's where the magic
came. There's just nothing else. Yeah. Well, yeah. What else? I like Deep Rock Galactic Survivor.
That one's good. Yeah.
Although I don't like the humping walls to like, I wish there was like a button, or I wish it had an animation. Like, I'm like really annoyed that it's like this like hammer just coming off you. I'm not a fan of guns, like in anything really. Like, I've just accepted that about myself. I don't really like shooters that much. Like, unless it's like my favorite shooter is like Chronicles of Riddick, which is a stealth game.
That is a fantastic game.
Yeah. And The Darkness also, but it's a game where you send demons to grab people and rip them open. Like, it's less another about the great shooting. Game.
Darkness, yeah, was crazy. Was
Starbreeze back in the day?
Demon voice.
Yo, yeah. That's
you need to get Mike Patton in your game.
I'm sure I could. Like, doesn't seem that far fetched. Like, he's like weird enough and like down enough to do like all. I mean, he did the theme song to the new Splinter's Revenge Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, and I don't really understand why, because it doesn't like benefit from like Mike Patton's like. I mean, I'm a huge Tom. I'm like into all the extra little bands after Faith No More too, like Tomahawk and Phantomas, and just keep Mr. Bungle. I saw Mr. Bungle live for the first time, and they were definitely on a metal kick, which was great. Like, they did a whole, they just broke off into Fuck the USA as a song, and I was like, yeah, man, I'm here for it.
Or actually, it was like, chat saying Peeping Tom.
And what else? Okay, so that's three. There's one game I'm just not going to talk about because I hate it. Like, I was like, yo, why is this game sold a million copies? It's bad.
Come on, talk about it.
All right.
What game do you desperately hate?
I do have a Survivors like tab on Steam. That has 12 games that I haven't put all of them in. Yeah, I really like Bone Razor Minions. That game is funny and kind of weird, has some bad humor in it, but it makes a lot of jokes about raising bones. but like, it's actually cool because you get to bring these. It's actually, you don't have weapons. You have these little minions that you get that are your weapons. I like Nimrods also. I thought that game was interesting. Scarlet Tower is okay. Halls of Torment, awesome.
Yes.
How do I forget that one?
I really like that one.
I think Nordic Ashes is cool, but I think the hitboxes are terrible, and I don't like the animation very much. Sea of Survivors, actually, it's a weird game where you're a boat. I can't really get very far in it, but it like you control a boat, and you keep leveling up your boat and finding islands and stuff. The game I'm most confused about is, what the hell is this game? It's like 3D. It's not in my Survivors like tab. but like, I was just like, I no got
it. It doesn't include it.
I kind of started playing it, and then I was just like, within my first run of it, I was like, okay. I guess I don't have to play the game anymore because the game just, you know, I leveled up. I'm like, this is my first time playing this game, and I've never, you know, I struggled a little bit when Vampire Survivors came out. And then this other game, I was just like, okay, it just plays itself now. I like literally like went and they were like, oh, here's the post run stuff. And I just kept annihilating it. I was like,
There's Why? One that's like that that I've played regularly, but I've also kind of stopped because the dev, I think it's like literally one guy. And like, so, you know, him getting patches out is like God only knows. But it's called Greedfall. And you're like, you're playing this like little space marine guy. You get dropped down on a planet. You have to do all these like various missions. Sorry, Greedland. Thank you.
Greedfall is a different game, right?
Yes, very different game.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game.
Yeah, Greedland. And you get dropped in these different biomes and you have to complete these missions and stuff like that. And because of like how many of these survivors games I've had to play for the podcast, like my first run through, I did not die. And that's like a 30, like you're doing like 20 minute missions. Like when you first start off and I'm just like, huh, something's up with this game. Like, where's the challenge?
But at the same time,
the thing is that it's just like, I've now gotten my guide like so overpowered to the point where I've actually fallen asleep while playing the game. I'll wake up 10 minutes later and discover I'm still alive and I'm kicking everyone's ass, including bosses. Like,
oh man. Yeah, you need to have some kind of challenge. How
it practically turned into like an idle clicker.
How long was your first run in Beatdown City Survivors?
This one? Oh yeah. God.
I think I made a minute and a half my first time.
Yeah, it was not long. I died pretty damn quick. And like I remember I just kept dying up until I got the Roddy Piper guy.
Cobra.
Cobra, thank you. I've
been using too.
Yeah, once I got him, I was doing pretty good. And then when I unlocked one of the rappers, I discovered that he was kicking everyone's ass. And so I've switched over to him. And now I'm actually trying to play this on my work computer with not exactly a lot of success. But right now I got the guy with the tape deck head going. With
Mike Eagle. Yeah, he's interesting because he floats. So you can't be affected by any ground liquids.
Oh shit!
Big part. It's part of the lore of his. if Open Mike Eagle's last few albums, like he has an album called Neighborhood Gods Unlimited, and it's like him in a suit, like with the tape head thing, like floating. And I was like, that would be an interesting character. He has low HP. If you touch a car. Cars that like the car that's on fire, you will get put on fire, and then there is no way to put yourself out because you cannot be touched by
because you can't touch water, right?
Oh no!
So there are pitfalls, but there's actually the more you get in it, you unlock more passives from Farouk and stuff, and one of the passives is a bottle of water that like reacts when you get hit. Sometimes it will douse you in water, which actually, again, some people. Like, it's good if you are prone to getting hit with water or with fire or other things, but it might not be great if that's not your biggest concern. But when I had it, I was like, oh yeah, this actually helped. Like with Mike, I definitely put a lot of time into defense. There's like one passive that gets you health, part of your money dropped as health. So I put that because I'm just like, I want all the health. Raise my health because, again, low health. And also because you could just get taken out by like two or three hits from the right person. But he can move around very quickly. I don't know. It's a very fun character. The game I was looking for was Soulstone Survivors. It is done tremendously well. And I don't like it at all. I was just like,
it's super repetitive. Like,
the music. I don't know. A lot of the game is just like, yeah, I'm like this game.
Wait, I might not be thinking of the right game.
I think this one also, I don't know if it's on console yet.
It is, because I know I've played it, but
okay.
The worst part about like this genre is that it's just like, know I've played it, but
I don't know what's different about it.
Yeah, I don't remember what's different about it from the other ones.
This game has 12,000 reviews on Steam. Like these, they have these great videos talking about what they're doing, this and that. And again, I like no pay or whatever. It's like, yeah, I'm just like, this is one of the most boring things I've played, because I literally like walked into the game and within two or three runs, I was just like, oh yeah, I just could put down the controller and leave. And I was just like, I don't want that. Like I do. we tried really hard to like kind of encourage movement for through the environment. That was one of my big concerns. Like, I actually watch a lot of like hands-free Vampire Survivors runs. There's this one guy who just does the, I don't touch my controller and I load up a character and see how far I can get.
Wait, I don't. Oh, so he just stands there?
Yeah, because like the zombies, like the monsters and stuff will push the gems toward you. The like, you know, as more and more, because certain people start with like, right, the dude starts with the garlic and that kills
them. I was gonna say, like, I was trying to figure out like what you would start with to even do that run, and yeah, the guy, the old guy with the garlic was my first thought.
He went through every single character though to see what was possible. Like, he used because like, especially if you level up your characters, then there's like retaliatory damage and all those things. So yeah, he. And it's definitely, again, it's a very luck-driven run, but he can get kind of far with, like, everyone. And that's just kind of funny to me. Like, again, I'm not the type of person to sit still. I probably play count. I notice a lot of people get really mad at certain parts of Vampire Survivors, and it's because they want to play the game, honestly, I think, as badly as possible. And just like, they're like, oh, if you up X, Y, and Z, or if you keep getting experience points, that makes, and apparently there's a thing where the enemies get harder the higher your level is. And I'm like, oh, okay, I don't really care. I'll just keep. It's actually not that difficult. So I'm like, what is wrong with you? You're trying to tell everyone how to min-max this game into being unfun completely. And I'm just like, no, I'll just keep going. Like, I don't know. I'm not trying to play this game. Although, like, we have gotten, like, we're getting, like, people being like, yo, how do we make this game harder for Beatdown City Survivors? Like, they're like, I beat it. I want to get it, make it harder. And I'm like,
okay. Harder. God damn.
Yeah. No, some people, there are people who are stuck in the first level for hours. This was a discussion that we had on Monday with me and my programmer. And I was like,
me,
I'm sort of okay with that. If you, like, again, I don't know, it's like, first level is, I guess, a test. And if you get through it, then you get the rest of the game. And if you don't, we tweak the first level so much and so many characters that I'm just like, everyone's playable. Everyone could beat the level. Every character could beat the level, and you get enough level ups to make it easier. I tried to, yeah, like Cobra is the dude who can clear the level. Like, I was like, we tried to make a character that I know everyone can win with, but there's also bits where it's like the sheer amount of enemies or whatever can really like. There's a lot of, I don't know, the game has a lot of psychology to it, where people just, like, psych themselves out, and, like, or my programmer was like, yeah, I see a lot of people, like, going through toxic waste to get away from enemies, and I'm like, that's not the play. Like, initially, the toxic waste was just green, and people would, at PAX, they would just walk through it, and I was like, and they'd be like, why am I getting hurt? And I'm like, because it's... Have you walked through bright green? If you saw bright green liquid on the street, would you walk through it?
Like, have you seen Daredevil? Yeah, I'm going to walk through it.
Or yeah, Turtles.
yeah.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Yo, Daredevil. It's still funny that Daredevil. No, wait. No, the Turtles are a riff off of Daredevil.
Yes. And yeah. However, it is canon that the same event turned them both into their respective. You know, it's heroes.
It's why they have the Foot Clan versus the Hand,
and,
which is in Daredevil. Yeah, that's like that weird, rabbit hole of alternative lore. But yeah, we then added bubbling to the toxic waste, because I was like, I don't know how to be clearer than this. Like, besides putting an arrow over, be like, don't touch this, please. Like. But yeah, people will often dash through fire to get away from enemies. And I'm like, fire is one of the worst things you can touch in the whole game. It hurts literally everything. Like, you can use it to kill bosses. Like, you can use it for, like, to use the environment as, like, a kill area. You can do so many interesting things with fire. you should probably stay as far away from it as possible. There was a bug, not kind of a bug, there was a hitbox issue that I noticed at a lot of PAXs that we fixed before launch, thankfully, where the car explosion hitbox was too big. So you would get hit like two or three tiles away from it. And I remember sitting there and being like, I have dealt with this for so long. And I was like, no, this has to go before we start the game. Like, and now it's, I think it's like right on the car size or you, cause like the goal is to make players feel as if they escaped being hurt by something as opposed to that they got hit by something they couldn't see. So like hitbox sizes are important. Like it's kind of how shooters work. You make the hitbox smaller than the ship so that if they dodge at the last second, they don't get hit by the bullet that is actually touching them. And they're like, oh, that feels good. But if they get hit by the bullet that
I mean, is how many shmups have giant ships that you control with a tiny little white dot in the center that represents the hitbox? And that's the only thing you got to worry about not getting hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's literally what video games are like.
Yeah.
Space Invaders, right? I think Space Invaders was very one-to-one, and that's why it felt weird. Like, I'm one of those people, I don't like Space Invaders as a game. I have not since the 80s.
Yeah, it didn't
I love Space
well.
Invaders. I love Space Invaders DX, though. One of the best games of all time. So, like, the one with all the music and everything. Like, it's on DS. It's also on Xbox. It's on everywhere. It's just need to make it a more thralling game that moved faster. Just like Mrs. Pac-Man. Pac-Man 1 is bad. Mrs. Pac-Man, amazing. Pac-Man CE, one of the best games ever made.
That Championship Edition is really good. I love how they put the twist on the Pac-Man formula. And of course, the throbbing techno is always good.
Yeah.
I just want to say throbbing.
Yes, I did.
Oh my God, wait. So, because this guy floats, he doesn't get to, like, he can't touch the electrified water.
Nope.
Ah, shit. Okay. Nice. I'm discovering shit as we do the interview.
What was really cool is, like, Open Mike Eagle just posted his video of him playing it because he streams whenever he's not on tour. And he posted that to YouTube, and I'm like, this is nice, because, like, you know, he and I are friends, and we both respect each other tremendously, like, in our work. And also, he doesn't like roguelikes, and he's been playing this game. And he was like, this game's dope. And I was like, what made you like it? He's like, oh, it's the vibes, like, the music, the environment. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I was going to say, this soundtrack, like, is so fucking good. Like,
and it's so nice to have a soundtrack that's not censored to hell and back.
That's true.
Yeah, too. ESRB, whatever the IARC ratings thing is, very hard to answer their questions because their questions either seem like gotchas or that you're either encompassing too much or too little. And like, I watched as they like updated the sound, like they updated the American rating to M, and I'm like, it's got cursing in it, like, and some cartoon violence. Like, I don't know. Like, it's basically a T rated game because teenagers would play this game. Like, it doesn't, like, it's not explicit about like telling people bad things to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like,
yeah, but they say the fuck word. You can't say the fuck word.
It's always, I asked someone for the ESRB once. I was like, is there like movies? Is there a certain amount? They were like, no. And I'm like, can you give me the amount? Like, cause I'm like, I don't know. Video game ratings don't make any sense. That's what I'm saying. Like, this game is, this game, a lot of my inspiration is, like, Tony Hawk, Jet Set, all those games that I used to work at Rockstar. So like, trying to get people into the weird shit that I really like. That's like this very, it's always weird. Cause like, I don't know. I've seen people be like, I hate rap music. And I'm like, this music's borderline jazz, man. Like if you listen to like some of these tracks to like Crushed Heavenly, which is with, it's KVI, Kenny Siegel on the production, but Shrapnel's on that one. And if you listen to it, the beginning of it starts with like a jazz loop of like this bass loop of ding 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 ding. And I'm like, what do you like it's spoken word, man. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't like people talking. I don't like people talking over saxophones. I'm like, that's like, again, poet, that's like beatniks in the 70s, right? Like, It's like the thing I've noticed is people are really very comfortable being declaring how much they don't like rap music, and I'm just like, that is the weirdest thing, because I've never seen that for a lot of other games where people either, I guess, they ignore the music or they really love it, or but I honestly think a lot of music's, I don't know what's so, because again, it's like, I don't know, when people think of rap music, like when you go on like dating apps or whatever, and you see people be like, I'm a fan of 90s rap. And if I said, oh, you're a big fan of DMX, then they'd be like, no. And I'm like, Tribe Called Quest? No. Oh, you like that one Biggie song, right? And they're like, oh yeah, okay. And again, like you think about it, and it's like rap music has since forever been such a, it's kind of weird that it has one term, one word, right? Because it's such a diverse genre. And yeah, it's just funny to me. Like, either you like it or you don't. I'm like, I don't really care. If you don't like it, like, just leave me alone. We put music toggle sliders on, turn them off, play the game. Don't tell me. I don't care.
Hey, you could have put country music in there.
Yeah, I feel a way, because again, like, old country, real country is good, right? Like,
yeah,
like, oh, the modern rah, rah, America,
but like
shit.
but putting the twang over any other music genre, including rap beats, doesn't make it country music. It's hilarious how like Beyonce can literally make a country album. They're like, no, it's not a country album. Lil Nas X makes a country song. Until they get Billy Ray Cyrus on it, it is not a country. I'm like, get out of here. What are you talking about? Like, it even has the twang on a guitar, my dude. Like, it's a Nine Inch Nails sample, too. Like, what do you mean? And then it's like, and then that dude covers Tracy Chapman's Fast Car, and it's one of the worst songs of all time.
And I have how do you not take heard that cover.
Don't.
I guess it's good. I haven't
heard it. It is so popular. It is. They took Fast Car, and they made it about cars. And I'm like, how did you misunderstand that this song is about alcohol abuse and like stuff like that? Like, and but like Tracy Chapman's pulling money. And the funny part is that Tracy Chapman will not let rappers sample her at all. And I'm like, and you let this guy like make one of the worst covers of all time? Okay, I'm going to have to question your taste. Beautiful music, but why are you letting, I mean, like it's just money at that point. But yeah, it's a, I mean, this, I feel like this album feels like the game. So that's what I'm saying. I was listening to these albums while I was playing the game, and I was like, this is the game. Like, this has to happen one way or another.
Like, the only person I think would be perfect that you haven't mentioned would be, like, Mega Ran.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with Mega Ran. It's just, I'm also down, like, Mega Ran did the rap song for Treasure and Beatdown City, the Ultra Remix update. But like Ran's vibes aren't like grimy by default. Like one of my favorite songs that Mega Ran is on is called River City Handsome. It is a posse cut that's just cut to a beat made out of the River City Ransom theme, and the raps on that are so intricately like linked to the game, but not at the same time, you know, like, and everyone has their own personalities. And it was actually the song that made me get really into Mega Ran, like, because I was like, this is like the beat's crazy, his raps are crazy, the other people are crazy, and it feels like very hood ass like River City Ransom. Like, what if River City Ransom was just a bunch of like black dudes from the hood? And I was like, yeah, this is amazing. But Mega Ran, like, again, like, I love his music tremendously. Yeah, he doesn't like his, it's just not his vibe, right? Like, his vibe isn't to like, if he, we could get on a track and that's when you grime it up. But like, these were just already made things that just spoke to what we were doing.
That makes sense. I just like the idea of controlling Ran in a game.
Oh, I'm thinking about that. We were talking about it. I'm talking about putting him in the game, maybe. Like, I gotta have this conversation with him. We've been talking about it for months. I just haven't. It's all about time. The investment. Like, there's, like, one dude who, like, said yeah to being in it. And he's, like, the perfect character to be in it. But we just didn't finish his character by the time the game came out. And he'll probably be dropping in, like, a like a week on PC, and then whenever Xbox approves,
year and a half on console.
Well, it's kind of like a, it's like a week to 2 weeks of an update type thing, depending on how on it they are. Like one day they approved a patch the same day we sent it in, and most days it's like 3 to 4 to 5 days.
Jeez.
Which sucks when things aren't the best at like launch, and you're like, oh, I'm trying to fix all these things that are coming in because we were on Game Pass, and I'm like, oh, there's so much feedback, and I'm like, okay, cool, I'm just going to watch as this sits in the queue for the next week now, while even we were getting, like, because there were like crashes or whatever, and I'm like, I never saw these things, I'm sorry. I can't fix it right now. It's fixed. It's sitting somewhere waiting for everybody, and everybody just wants to play the game right now, and it's just like everyone's getting angry, and I'm like, I literally cannot do anything besides recommend you come to Steam and buy the game.
our one good friend Carnage is so upset that the patch went through to get rid of debug mode on PC.
Yeah, I was actually hoping to use that today. I haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah,
I was like, oh sweet, like I'll be playing this while we're interviewing, and like I can go into the debug menu, and then I'm just like, I'm hitting I, and it's just like, why isn't it coming up?
Yeah, that was something I did not see clearly. Usually, my programmer is really good about, he makes all the builds. That's like, and also though, there was actually a problem where like, I got confused a little bit by the update pushing matrix. When something gets approved, you have to then go through and manually publish it, and then it takes 2 hours to get published. And I hadn't realized that. So we had actually gotten several builds approved. and I thought they were just good to go. Just learning, you know, like.
Well, people love their achievements, which I got to give you credit. There are so many achievements in this game. There are so many special achievements where they require such specific circumstances that I can't see anyone getting the 1K on this in like 3 hours, like so many people want in these games. And it makes me so happy that there's so much to do in this, and it rewards destruction, it rewards creativity, it rewards thinking outside the box. It's a really cool achievement list. I like it.
We were trying to do a little bit of like following Vampire Survivors, but Vampire Survivors has too many achievements. They have 200, I think, 205 point achievements. And I kind of just got tired at some point. I was like, I can't keep making achievements. Like, because every achievement, you have to make an image, right? Like, yeah. And I think even on Steam, you're limited to, depending on like, how many copies of whatever you've sold, like I think you can't necessarily add a ton. And I, you know, Xbox again for Vampire Survivors was a later thing, whereas we were day and date because like Xbox is who paid for the game to exist in this world, and I'm still forever thankful, kind of like what y'all were saying. When we sent off this demo, it didn't have like the apartment, but it did have a full 20-minute like beat the mid boss, beat the bosses, and the guy at Xbox who I sent it to, he basically texted me. He was like, "I need to delete this from my computer because I just keep playing it." And I was like, "Oh, that's a good sign."
Nice.
Hopefully that turns into something, and then it did. And I was like, "Okay." It was very good to have that communication because I'm like sitting here getting people telling me, oh, this is too expensive. And I'm like, yo, I've like cut the budget down so much. What do you mean it's too expensive? And then the fact that they came through and were like, yeah, we want to do this for this game. I was like, oh, amazing. Because really otherwise cool. It just wouldn't exist. And it also says at the same time, it's kind of like, well, like, yeah, we did all the right things. We made a game that has a dope loop, et cetera, et cetera. And then, a lot of people don't have experience publishing this type of genre. A lot of people think it's toast, and I think they think it's toast because there's a lot of fast follows that aren't super interesting. But I don't know. Our game, again, that's why I was like, our game is not that, it is that genre, but it is not that genre. And if you don't see that, then like you're not looking at it. I actually have a talk at Gamescom this year. Or DevCom, which is the developer part of Gamescom, before
about how people need to rethink their biases with genre and stuff, and in order to find like the hot hidden gems. And we did have publisher interest. Like there was one company I went to speak at Develop Brighton last year. And there was this guy who had played it, heard the music, was like, I am enthralled with this game. We want to do it. I think they ran into financing issues.
Oh no. Huh.
But it was nice. I've had so much interest. again, it was just nice to, like, I don't know, feel wanted. Also, it was interesting, like, on the European side to see more interest than on the American side. Like, it kind of speaks a little bit to the proto kind of Grand Theft Auto thing, like of like, or even just the music industry, how like Bob Marley had to go to Europe to become big as Bob Marley, because they didn't foresee him becoming big on his own in America. He was going to switch to being an R&B singer to try to get big in America. And they were like, no, go to Europe. Like they'll be down for the reggae, and then you can come back and America will be all about it. And it's 100% what happened. So like there's a lot of culture driven stuff. why folks can see a little bit differently. Like they can see how hot that stuff is. Like the artists that are in this game, like they'll sell out like in Europe more consecutively than they'll do in like cities in America, even though, even though like this is where the market is, right? Like quote unquote. So it's super interesting.
How has the game performed on Game Pass? It's been out about a week now. Has there been a lot of interest in the game? Has there been a lot of feedback, a lot of players? How are things looking for it?
I am getting a lot of feedback. Most of the feedback I get is from Game Pass people, which is a gift and a curse. Also because the Game Pass game is, even if it's on PC, it is fundamentally different than the Steam build. Like, because it is the same as the Xbox build. Even though it is the PC build, if that... yeah. Right? Like, it is linked to Xbox's certification. It has its own things, like Xbox achievements. Like, when I loaded it up, it looked like the game crashed, but it just needed an extra second to do the achievements. You know, like to get the Xbox account and everything running.
Yeah.
Because there's just stuff that runs through the Microsoft Store that's not on Steam. I've looked briefly. Like, I know we were having a bunch of crashes, and I think that really tanked the review score on Xbox. Whereas on Steam, we're at very positive at 100%. And because we were able to... Like, again, I didn't even see these crashes. So I'm like, I don't know what these things are. Like, I'm getting also weird bugs that I'm just like, where did this come from? Like, I don't even understand. One person said they lost their save on like the, on PC. And I'm like, how is that even possible? Is that like a cloud save issue? I have to now dig in because the game has cloud saves across Xbox. Like, I loaded it up on Windows Store, and it just continued for my Xbox game. I was like, cool, that's awesome. But someone lost their save, and I was like, I really don't understand how that's possible. And so I'm having to like figure out all the because a lot of people say, yo, I had this issue, and then I say, where was it? They're coming to the Steam forums too, and they're like, yo, we have this issue. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Where are you playing it? And they're like, oh, PC Game Pass. And I'm like, oh, you're 2 weeks behind. Sorry. I can't actually time travel to see that build right now. Like, I'd have to do a lot to get that loaded. So I'm like, yo, there's a new patch coming very soon. So it's interesting. It's, I'm very, like, again, the Game Pass people, like, we had some achievements that didn't load. Something to do with last minute adding them to the, because I think I added some more to the PC, the Steam build, and then we added them to the Xbox, and there was a bug where they weren't unlocking, but then when we pushed our patch live, then a bunch unlocked for people. It's interesting juggling the two. Achievements definitely are always a big bug issue. That's been a big bug issue since like when I worked at, like, I used to work at Major League Baseball, and those were achievements that just, you know, people would run into, like, playing on an entire, imagine playing an entire baseball season where there's all these different little pieces that need to happen, and then you finish the baseball season and you do not get the achievement for it because there was one little bug on the way while you played every single game of an entire baseball season. That's like a month of your life or something.
Well, hold up. Did that happen on MLB The Show, or is that RBI?
RBI Baseball was our game. Yeah. We didn't make the show. My team published the show on Xbox.
Gotcha. Like, yeah. I've tried playing a couple of the RBI games and,
no comment. I probably said too much already.
Let's just say the home run derby was the best part.
We all know there's a reason why the show is on Xbox now. So,
well, it's just, I mean, it's the it was it, it, think
it, was, it, it was the gold standard for baseball games. And
yeah, that was my old boss who got that. You know, it was a lot of years of meetings. And it's a great game. Having
every year it's released on Xbox so far. I like the first year I bought it. I'm like, this is such a novel thing of a PlayStation game releasing on Xbox. I want to support this. Mm-hmm. And I bought the collector's edition. I got the hat with it. I got the steelbook. And I just fell in love with the series. And every year I buy it and I play it. And I go for like 2 months of just nonstop playing that game. And then a year later, it happens again. And then a year later, it happens again.
You know, and it's funny because honestly, it wasn't until MLB The Show that I understood Madden Bros. Like, you know, it's like, oh, every August I've got to get Madden, like blah, 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 blah. And it's like, it's just the same game over and over, just with new rosters and like maybe like a shinier coat of paint. And yeah, with MLB The Show, it was just like, oh my God, like, I need this.
I got to open new card packs this year. I got to get new achievements this year.
Oh, and to that end, I'm pretty sure like those bugs got like the season bugs got fixed before the game shipped. It was more just like me being at work, seeing people being like, why the fuck is the season not like achievement not? And because it was like a, you know, you'd have to painstakingly find this thing. To be like, why didn't this thing? And like, you know, you have a team of QA testers playing it and trying to get someone to figure out what was the one step or whatever along the way that, So I don't know. Like first time when we put out Treasure Beatdown City, we had an outsource, porting person who just, that was their job. And so we took it in house because I wanted to pay my programmer, and it's just the two of us, so it's like a lot easier also if we also have that internal knowledge, you know, like it means I don't have to wake someone up that's not on our team to be like, hey, there's all these issues going on, like, because like right now, like if we needed to open up Treasure Beatdown City Ultra Remix to fix something, that's still my programmer now, like instead of having to go call someone who like is far removed from the project at this point and would have to reinstall everything and this and that and blah, 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 in order to do it. So it was just like, it was a learning process on our end. So it's cool to have that done.
Very cool. I know we've been chatting for quite a while. I like how I'll always tell my guests, yeah, we'll aim for like 40 minutes and now we're over an hour. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
Something that it's interesting, just because like, and this isn't, I'm going to preface this by saying that this person's behavior is not what I'm here to talk about. It's more like the game. There's someone on Reddit who was just really mad at me, and I think they were a Game Pass person, because they were like, first off, I don't know. There's some things that I just don't understand. I don't know how to tell. Like somebody was like, hey, I beat the boss, but the game kept going. How long am I supposed to play for? And I was just like, well, if you beat a boss in a video game until they tell you when, you didn't beat the boss, right? Like, it's like if you get to the Hammer Bros in 8-4 or whatever, 8-1 in Super Mario Brothers, do you just stop there and be like, yo, I beat the boss? Because they are clearly a boss, right? Like, no, you do it when you
go through the castle. And it, so this one person was like, you should have said that, idiot. And I was like, I don't know, man. The first time I played, Vampire Survivors, death just came out of nowhere and killed me one day, right? Like, I didn't know how long I had to play. I like mystery and things. Like, we tried to keep this game a little mysterious. But also, there's like a funny thing where that person was really mad about the way that the people, the survivors you find, and how they act. And I'm like, it's a,
what?
It's, well, they didn't like the fact that you can get like toxic because they get too close to you when they're covered in toxic sludge, or like them get, again, they were like calling me an idiot or whatever. And I'm like, it's a commentary on the fact that you cannot control those around you. Right? Like, you can, like, granted, it's also just kind of the way that it's the way that a culmination of all the systems work. But I really also like the end of the characters are actually easy. The survivors are a lot easier to keep alive as long as you stay with them and actively nurture them and like go looking for money and put it into their triage instead of just into yourself. And if you do that with your team of people, like I've gotten to the end of the run, it's still very hard to complete a run with all of your people, but you know, Abby gives you melee up, which means she gives it to everyone on the team. Heather gives you armor up or weapon up, which is really good for you. Armor goes for everybody. And then Jean has these little boom boxes that distract people. And Pumpkin, when you unlock her, she also has like, when you got to rescue the other three people and then you can get her. She has dodge up. And it's like these things like kind of feed into everybody. But my personal reaction when shit goes crazy is I start dodging. I start dashing, running away, this and that. And then the people die. And I was like, it's very interesting. I think the mechanics tell the story of individuality versus protection. And also, again, like you can't control, like the way I first got COVID was because someone gave COVID to someone close to me after I had been completely cautious of COVID, right? Like,
yeah.
So then it's like someone, and you don't even know how far deep that someone's go, right? Remember when we were told like it was all about personal precautions? And I'm like, but if everyone was precautious, then maybe we wouldn't be getting it randomly. If people traced everything, and they were like, oh, it's up to you. And you know, again, like I lived in New York during 2020, like it was one of the most stressful years, probably the most stressful year of my life because I was steps away from dying all the time. Like, you know, New York City is a place where we have 9 million people it's 9 million people across boroughs, but Manhattan's one of the densest places, right? And like, and people flying in and out still for whatever reason, they still let people do this. You're hearing ambulances bringing bodies to just dump into a hole in the Bronx every day. You're just hearing ambulances. I left my apartment at 3 a.m. and there was a guy sitting on the stoop like, hey man. And I was like, yo, I didn't wear a mask because I thought no one would be out right now. And again, like, you're too close, buddy. Like, if you got the thing and there's no vaccine, you could be dead. I could be dead. I don't know. Like, you don't know about me either.
That was a scary time. It was,
yeah.
Like, no one knew what the fuck was going on.
And that's kind of why, like, again, you didn't have control over other people, this and that, blah, blah. And that's why, like, I'm very happy with, like, the behavior in the characters because they are hard to predict and they do make stupid decisions. I think I really like that it came out in this weird systems-driven way where it's like, yeah, you can't control them and that's just kind of the way it is. And I don't think they're like bad, like a lot of, you know, I remember playing GoldenEye and hating the missions where you had to escort. Like, escort missions are notoriously one of the worst things in games.
Yeah.
And we worked very hard to, yeah, like all the survivors characters have a lot of HP that's different than when you play them. Like, they're way higher. And when you heal them at a percentage instead of a number, so that like it's actually kind of cheap to give them a large percentage of health back. We really tried to balance a lot of this stuff, but also again, I still find myself running away and watching them die and feeling a little sad, being like, whoops, I did a thing that caused them to die, or hey, they did a dumb thing, or feeling, yeah, one way or another.
it's just funny. Like, it's super interesting to watch people. Like, it just, people just get angry being like, I get really mad when the people that are with me make stupid decisions and die. Fix this. Yeah. And I'm just like, I can't fix it. It's how it works in real life. Like, what are you talking about?
It's human nature.
It, yeah. And the game is that, honestly. It's yeah, we wanted to say things without saying too much, and I've learned the power of systems driven design working on it, and it never makes me sad. Like, I play the game still. I was really burnt out one weekend. I was like while we were testing it, I'm like, I'm playing this game for like 10 hours a day straight to find bugs. I don't want to do this anymore, but if I take a break, like, again, every time I play the game, if I'm on a run, I finish that run. I go as far as I can because I have a good time with it. So I'm glad y'all are having a good time, too.
Yeah, it's a really fun game. I love all the wrestling references in it. I'm the big wrestling fan on the show, so I enjoy anything that has wrestling references.
Boys. Yeah, the chairs were very important to me. yeah, and also, like, if you, weapons. I was gonna say, if you take the knives with the chair, you get the barbed wire chairs also.
I got the boomerang chairs, or the slingshot chairs.
Those are fun, yeah.
It just friggin' bounced. I love the combinations. Like, we could talk, like, another hour on this game, and I don't think that would be enough, but we do have more show we gotta take care of, so I gotta work on wrapping this up. Jacob, do you have any final questions you want to ask?
Not really. I mean, like, he's pretty much answered everything and talked about everything that I would have, wanted to cover about the game. Although now I'm just like, oh man, I want to hear more about, like, the RBI baseball stuff.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, no, I do, like, because I find it fascinating. Like, I mean, because playing, like, that versus, like, you know, the show, it's just like, you know, I don't know, like, I want to know stuff about, like, the organization, like MLB Advanced Media. How many people were actually, like, in that thing? Like, you know, I don't know. It was there, like, alongside the show, and then just, like, show comes to Xbox and RBI Baseball's like, we're done. Like, I don't know. I realize that was a lot.
There is an article on Polygon about my old department. If you look up RBI and like Polygon, you can see some of my former bosses in the article.
Okay, cool.
It was a funny time. I mostly worked on a home run derby stuff, VR and mobile, and at bat.
Jacob, VR, the home run.
I used to know everything about baseball, and now I know almost nothing, except I still remember a lot. I went to my first Sox game last week, and they beat the Dodgers, and I'm like, oh, I know who Freddie Freeman, I know Otani, I know all these people, because they all were, like, hot when I was working there. I remember Otani dropped while I was at MLB, so, like, and I remember we had to drop him in the home run derby game. Like, you know, they have to do this whole thing where until they play their first game, they're not technically on the roster, I think. So, like, they're not covered by the players. There's something.
Yeah.
So as soon as he played, it was like, okay, we got to drop. We had to have all this stuff, like, ready to go. And I remember the excitement over Otani. But, yeah, like,
I mean, it's still there. Man's got a $700 million contract.
I just meant, like, it's just funny to me because, like, if you would have asked me if I would have ever been working on baseball games, I would have said no. But when they hired me, I became, like, the expert and good at doing everything I did. Because, like, as a designer, I've got to be the best at what I'm doing. Like, I can't do again, that's why I said, like, Beatdown Six Survivors, to me, had to be the best game in the genre, or else we weren't doing what I wanted to do. And by being the best, man, it had to be what it is. Like, it is this vibe of a fucking game that, like, again, is hard to compare to other things. Because it's like, sure, it has the trappings of, and then it's like, yeah, but it has all this other stuff.
Fucking Chad, it is an awesome vibe. It's such a chill game too. Like, it's stressful, but it's chill at the same time. Like, the music is, it's such an important part of the experience in this game. Because different from everything else out there musically.
Is there like a soundtrack that's offered for this game? Like, even, like, I mean, I don't know if there's one on Steam.
I can give you a link. It is just literally the three albums. Like, they just exist in the world.
Oh, like on iTunes and stuff.
Yeah. Like,
okay.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It is fully available music out in the world. It's, but again, it's like, it's, you know, they're not mainstream artists, right? Like, and so my favorite thing, honestly, my favorite thing, like, I like people liking my game and all, but my favorite thing is when people are like, who are these artists? Like, I really love this because, music is so incredibly important to me. And again, like, I am over the moon. I'm still like, it's still like amazing that these guys all trusted me with their stuff. And that, you know, I'm able to kind of like, just be in that sphere because like, I love going to shows. I've seen these guys all play live multiple times. Listen to the albums. I listen to these songs all the time while playing, making the game. So I'm like, I'm pretty sure I like these three albums more than literally anybody else on the face of the planet. And they don't ever get old for me. Yeah, I don't know. I feel very grateful to have been able to do this also because I get some people who are like, yo, I'll just give you music. And sometimes I'm like, well, I don't really want your music. because again, like the thing is I'm very picky. Like there's like, I think two albums, I've loved to add to this, but like we hit budget and I refuse. Like although there's this one artist who has a great album who was like, yo, you can use my shit whenever you want. And I was like, I will keep that under my hat because my goal is to always make sure people walk away with something just because I don't know. I don't like asking anyone to give their art away for free. And I know music gets given away all the time. And that's why I was like, yo, I can give you more than what 200,000 plays will give you for like, in money to be a part of this thing I'm doing. And the fact that they were all like, yo, this looks dope. This looks amazing. I get texts from folks when they finally saw the finished game. It just means a lot to me.
Very cool. Bree, any final questions on your end?
I did have one question. I noticed at the beginning of the game, or the very beginning before the game starts, there's like a version of the FBI, a track mode screen that says winners don't mash buttons. Mm-hmm. What is that like a reference to treachery somehow? Or is that just what's the sentiment there?
Winners don't do drugs.
I understand the FBI, I didn't know if there was something about the mashing buttons.
So it's, a load screen in Treachery and Beatdown City because Treachery and Beatdown City is a turn-based real-time strategy game. So like if you were mashing buttons in that game, you were making a mistake.
Fair.
I see a lot of people mashing.
I didn't play Treachery, so I wasn't sure if that's what it was.
So Treachery is a real-time, but it also has this whole menu thing and there is a real-time attack, but that attack is not good. And I see people who say, I love this game and they're like, it's because you just have like a basic three hit combo that's meant for like breaking objects and doing more utilitarian stuff. And you use a menu to make these really cool combos. So that was kind of my joke back then. However, I also see people like our game is mostly a dual stick game, right? Mm-hmm. You don't actually also have to use the right stick. You can turn. So the one thing I will tune, if you turn off auto attacking, you will not necessarily knock down the things you don't want to knock down. We initially didn't have the auto attack tracking objects, but then we found people didn't know they could knock down objects or break objects. Like, so we just made auto attack everything. You can aim your attack with the right stick and you can actually hit LB to turn off auto attacks, to really control what you're doing. There is a smart attack for enemies, but like, yeah, I don't think it'll attack objects unless you aim in that general direction with the stick. But that's the thing. Like I saw people at PAX just
Because the game, it's like, people keep saying the game is a beat-em-up, and I'm like, in zero parts is it a beat-em-up. Like, there is, there's nothing. It has aesthetics, but I'm like, again, Vampire Survivors is not a Castlevania game. Death Must Die is not a Diablo game, because you don't, like, you can click, but it really doesn't make anything go faster, because everyone has their cooldowns. And again, it's the powers you get attached to your character. And I did kind of notice, like, I've still seen previews where people call it belt action bullet heaven, and I'm like, I don't know what you mean, because, I mean, like, like, our game's just a very hood-ass game. Like, the hood is, like, like, the boots and everything are, it's like the chairs of the Bibles. We did add the ability for you to punch the chairs into things. But that's also, again, a nod to Death Must Die, where I think you get these stones around you that you can hit off to enemies. But then we made that some of the chairs can rebound. Our game has a lot of crafting in it. It's a sandbox. It's immersive sim. And everyone's like, yo, it's a beat 'em up. And they walk up and they pick up the controller and they start jamming on the A button. And I'm like, you are going to get nowhere quick, my friend. And I'm just like, and I get it, the term beat down city. I guess this is like unhinging people's brains. So why we were like, I'm putting this in here too. And we like, I went through and I like redid all the art for the finger to make it like, you know, at our new like 32-bit style aesthetic. Because the old one was like Treasure Beat Down City is very like kind of 8-bit-ish, like Commodore 64 style color pattern. Style. And so, yeah, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna take the time and I'm gonna up-res all this art and make it look a lot nicer just to say this again, because please stop mashing buttons when you play this game. and then our tutorial, we're very much like, hey, like, there's nothing in here about mashing buttons, nothing. There's no button that says press A to punch, because like a lot of Survivor's likes actually do have buttons to press to
that
attack.
That is true.
Which, yep. I think is misunderstanding the more passive nature of things. And yeah, we turned our thing more into a twin sticky game. But yeah, that's where that's from.
All right, cool. Long and short.
Hockey, you got anything, or are you still kind of checked out tonight?
I'm still checked out.
That is 100% fair. Thank you for being
here. I'll ask a question on Aki's behalf. How's that? What are your ideal pizza toppings? Totally random question.
Oh, pizza's so good.
See? This is an Aki question.
It's very simple, kind of like a pepperoni and sausage person, but like chunky sausage, like not the like weird flaky specks of sausage that some folks do. Also, having moved from New York then to Georgia for a bit, and now in Chicago.
Chicago pizza is very different, yeah.
It is and it's not, like, because deep dish, like, is sort of a fantasy. Like, it is not what everyone sells. It's actually thin crust, which is what everyone sells, like, because deep dish is also, like, $50 for a pie.
Yeah. And,
Different brands. Like, I came to Pequod's back in 2014. That's very different from Lou Amanai's. I'm like, I'm getting up on all the Chicago stuff, and they have New York style slices here too. But like, yeah, yo, there's a spot near this music venue called Subterranean where they have like bacon jam on the pizza.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's, yo, their pizzas are slamming. They've got like, yeah, like white pies.
See, I'm a white pizza person.
They have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, when it's done well, is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's this white pie. There's a spot called Mama's 2 in New York that's like very, these thick pieces that are square, that are like really cooked to the point where the cheese gets crispy on top. And it's got this weird set of reviews where people are like, I don't like this, but it also always has a line outside of it. It's, again, it reminds me of video games where people don't accept the thing for what it is and they get mad at it and they're like, I'm gonna write a review because I don't like this video game or pizza. But then like, there's
200 people outside the door every day that don't write a review. They just buy the pizza and they love it. And then, like, the loudest, like, again, I'm having X problem with, I don't like the fact that this is burned or whatever. And I'm like, then why are you here? Like, did you not see all the pizza that they're selling before you ordered the pizza? You know, like, it's, and I used to buy this all the time, and I'm pretty sure they're still open. But yeah, like, yeah, pepperoni and sausage are, I don't know, like, vegetables can be complicated.
Yeah.
If they don't come out right, you know, it's all about, sometimes it's all about the bake or whatever. Mushroom. I actually like black olives a lot too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a local pizza place. They do like carnival style pizza where it's more of a bakery than a pizza place. And they use American cheese and just like tomato sauce instead of pizza sauce. And it's like really good carnival pizza. I really enjoy it. It's so different from everything else, but.
Oh my God.
As someone who hates American cheese,
I know.
That shit's terrible.
Like, Galo's in Berwick.
It sticks to the roof of your mouth. And like, I hated every single moment that I had to peel the cheese off the roof of my mouth. Like, oh God.
Even though, yeah, even though like Farouk doesn't like, Farouk only sells things he sells. Like, and but you still can find pizza in the pizza and hot dogs. So he doesn't sell those, but but we had to make it was like one of those things where I was like, yo, I realized there's no pizza in Treasure Beatdown City. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, we gotta put pizza in this game.
Very good. Last question I guess I will wrap things up with is, where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
Yeah, I am Sean, S-H-A-W-N, the word double spelled out, A, everywhere, basically. I just loaded Threads, which looks like Lord of the Flies now. I don't know. It's like, it's like been on Blue Sky for so long that like Blue Sky and Instagram to the point where like Threads just looks like, I don't know, like where they're suggesting everyone that you're not following. And I'm like, do I have a feed at all? Like of people I follow. And, newchallenger.com and the word N-U, not N-E-W, challenger.com, beatdowncity.com. Stuff's on Steam. Also help run a nonprofit called Black Voices in Gaming. We are blackvoicesingaming.org or .com. Also, that's, I'm doing like all our social media right now. I'm on the leadership team, and you know, they like that group was also very important. Like we did a showcase with Summer Game Fest, and that we got like, I think I got like 1,000 plus wish lists that week. And I'm like, thank you so much. Like, and that is not even in comparison to some of the other games we got to debut. There was a game called Bathory Heritage and Blood, debuted by this developer Nana Moon, and she got 15,000 wish lists in like a week. And I'm like, yo, that's awesome. That's like this lot. Super cool Castlevania game. Again, like my game has it struggles unless it doesn't. Like if people see it and they're like, yo, that's 100% my thing, they're like 100% their thing. It's definitely a less niche title than Treachery Beatdown City. But yeah, I don't know. That showcase, I was just very happy. Like all the developers that are in our Discord, because we help them with mentorship and everything. So it's an invite kind of only Discord to keep it very small so that we can manage. But like watching people be like, I got 1,000, I got 2,000, I got 5,000. I'm like, thank you, because I just want everyone's, and we kind of launched right out of Summer Game Fest, and that was not 100% by design, but it was what we had to do. And you know, I think we could have had a much worse launch, so I think very happy with that. And also just, I feel very thankful. It feels weird to be like on the leadership of a nonprofit that can also help, but Black Voice in Gaming is very much, it's like, it's got to be able to help all Black developers across the world, including the, like, it's kind of like the, including the people who help run it, right? Like, it's like, if you can't, it's like, I'm not only president, I'm the member, like, of the, was it the Men's Warehouse?
Hair Club for Men.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, like, I'm in there, I'm giving everyone advice, but also I'm having to take you know, we're I had a little trailer in there. I just, yeah, feel very thankful to that that whole knock-on effect happened, because like all the other showcases were cool too, but just feel very proud that my showcase could help me and all the other games, because like Black game developers are less than like Black game developers who are making their own indie games are like probably less than 1% of the industry, and that's kind of a crazy amount. And so many talented people that just can't seem to, you know, it's a lot of work. Like having been doing indie stuff for like 14 years now minimum, so out of my 26 years in the games industry, and it's it's nice to do my own thing, but it's also very hard, you know, like
very much know how that feels. We've been doing this for over 13 years now, and I think we still have more years than listeners.
I had a podcast forever ago. I had 4 episodes and I gave up because I didn't know. I got to the end of one of them and I wasn't happy with it. And I was like, wow, I just worked like 5 hours on this podcast and I didn't do what I needed to do. It was like, I think there were reflections on E3 that year. And I was just like, I don't like what I said on this podcast. I'm never doing this again. although my next podcast is going to be, it's definitely is going to happen, because we actually speaking of Mega Ran, I'm going to be starting I don't know when, it hopefully be in the next month or two. Well, I got to probably line up people and start it. A hip hop and video games podcast.
Very cool.
Earlier this year at MAGFest, I got to have my second ever panel that was hip hop and video games, and both of those panels had Mega Ran on them.
Fuck, you were at MAGFest?
Yeah, we had a hip hop and video games panel.
I should have paid attention. That's Mega like Ran. My jam every year. I do MAGFest. That's my thing.
We were showing the game there too. We had LT Head Trip, who's a amazing rapper, who also has a Zelda podcast where he records people playing Zelda audio only, and has them react to it. They were doing the like Nintendo Switch Championship Edition version of Zelda or whatever. So I got to play that and get recorded playing it. But also, yeah, he's and then this one of the best producers in the world, Quelle Chris, who also makes video game themed music videos, making sprite art. So I got to unpack how he started making sprite art. Mega Ran, obviously being the champion of MAGFest, was got to open up about some things on there. My homie Rajan, who's also a game developer who shipped Spirit Swap, which is heavily hip hop.
I think like he was on for that.
They were.
Probably, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they were on.
We had like 2 or 3 people on for that game, I believe.
Probably, yeah. It was a co-op, so yeah. So Rajan did that game, does AAA dev, and after was like, I'm not doing any stuff anymore. I'm just going to make music. So I was making beats and stuff. So we got to have this amazing discussion. And that being my second time, I was like, yeah, we need to do this for real. Like talking to, I think I could talk to all the rappers in the world to like figure out like what they like about video games, what would be into making video games. I don't know, because like my thing is like with this game, this will be the last thing, this game, I try to respect the folks that I'm working with, right? Because I love what they're doing, but you know, we've seen in the industry, there's like a whole article about how quote unquote hard 50 Cent was to work with, right? On Blood in the Sand. And I'm like, you didn't work with him. You just took his license, and then he showed up occasionally and was like, can't do something different. Because if you had talked to him on a long-term level and shown him how to make the game and this and that, maybe he wouldn't show up and being like, my son wants more helicopters. You could have explained, hey, we can't actually do this, but instead they just wanted to partake in the license, you know, like the body of the person and not the mind or the heart or the culture, really. Like you're trying to benefit off of something without necessarily involving the person, which was also a problem with like the Wu-Tang game that was the reskin of Thrill Kill back in the day.
Oh yeah,
they all hate that game, but they love Def Jam Vendetta because they got talked to, they got asked, like, what are your hopes and dreams and ambitions and whatever, and they got some of what they wanted out of it, right? Like, so I think that's just what kind of my goal to do going forward, and I'm just curious to hear what people think about video games, because so it's clear so many people love video games, it's so important to them culturally, and as someone with the music is so important to me culturally and video games, I don't know, I think we're gonna have some interesting times unpacking that.
I gotta definitely keep my eye on if you're gonna be at MAGFest again next year.
Maybe it was a weird, you know, it's an expensive endeavor.
If you are, I have to get you on my panel. I've been doing a panel there for a few years now. We call it Welcome Lumberjacks, because that's the term given to people who have been to all the MAGFests. And we just go on stage and just bullshit about the early days of MAGFest for like an hour or two.
Should get maybe, I mean, you could get like, I think Head Trip is, I don't know if he's been there to all of them, but Head Trip is in the DC area, which is why, or the National Harbor area, which is why we were able to do that in the first place.
I like getting weird guests on my show, on my panel, and not advertising it. Like, we had Matthew of Botchamania on our panel this year.
Oh, interesting.
Why? Because he was there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was my roommate for MAGFest this year. So I'm like, you want to do my panel with me? He's like, sure. And he joined for the panel. We've had musicians on, Grant Henry is on from Metroid Metal. He's on like every year. Tony Dickinson from Tiberian Sons. He's been on. Yeah, it's just friends bullshitting about friendship for.
Yeah, this was my first MAGFest. Because I would always forget to submit my game for the thing. And it was funny because the feedback for the game was basically all the feedback I typically get, like from anyone who's tapped into video games, they're like, yo, I love the systems, I love the crafting, I love this, and also, oh my god, the soundtrack. And I think that's again, I just want people to, I'm gonna try to start sending this this, because I made a playlist on Spotify for it, but I'm always like, go listen to it on, go buy it on Bandcamp. Because I have like,
yeah, I'll have to get some Bandcamp links from you so we can include them in the show notes so people can grab the albums.
I recently quit like Spotify. I'm on Tidal because they pay people more. But even though it's a bad app, I'd rather use a bad app that pays more than the app that that is almost at the bottom.
I still buy everything off iTunes just because it's easier for me.
Yeah, I know iTunes. I mean, that's a direct payment thing, right? Like, it's just more about the, like, it's kind of funny that no one calls out YouTube, but YouTube apparently pays like some of the least amount of money. I have experience with it a little bit because I have the song with Open Mike Eagle with Treasure and Beatdown City on, it's on the digital streaming platforms. And yeah, like the last time I logged in, they were like, yeah, you got like $53. I'm like, we have hundreds of thousands of plays of this song and make like a few hundred bucks. And I'm like, and that's going down, which is just crazy.
I think on YouTube, it took us 9 or 10 years to make $20 in ad revenue.
Yeah.
So I turned off all ads on our videos.
That's just not worth
it to have ads on there for $20 in a decade? Are you serious?
For decreased retention? Like, all, like, you guys understand you're like cutting out everything. It reminds me of when our trailers get uploaded to like bigger platforms like IGN or whatever that have ads on them, and I'm like, my trailer's an ad.
Yeah.
So now you're advertising on my ad, making it harder for people to see my ad. Like, I'm like, I quit out of so many ads that I'm just like, oh, I didn't see the trailer. And I'm like, could y'all like maybe turn that off for just the trailers? Because that's how we get people to see our games. And if you're hosting them, great, but you're not paying to host them. They're all on YouTube. Like, and then you're monetizing off of my trailer. That feels a little weird.
Yeah. I don't get it. I try to avoid advertising everywhere I can. I try turning it off on Twitch. If anything runs, it's not because I have them scheduled. I have everything turned off if I can.
Twitch is absolute nightmare. I use my Twitch subscription with Open Mic Eagle every month, so watching anything else on Twitch is impossible.
I just paid for Twitch Turbo because I watch Twitch so much. I figured I can't subscribe to everybody I watch. I'll just pay the $12 a month or whatever it is to just not get ads, and it's good enough for me.
Fair.
Sean, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on chatting with us. We got to get you back on again sooner than a few years from now. Come back when there's some updates to Beatdown City Survivors, and we could talk about that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Awesome. Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show in just a little bit. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on. Again, the game is Beatdown City Survivors. It is on Steam and Xbox, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And $10?
$10, yeah.
People should buy it.
And Game Pass.
And Game Pass. And people should buy it. Even on Game Pass, people should buy it.
I agree.
Sean, do you have any final words to end this segment of the show?
I just want to say thank you to anybody who played the game and, you know, who liked it. You know, it's a long... It was a long journey for my first indie game to come out, and then for my second one, it's been just, yeah, it's been nice to see the folks reacting, liking it. It's just a pleasure.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to Sean Alexander Allen of New Challenger coming on, chatting about Beatdown City Survivors with us. That was a really, really good chat.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Sizable one.
You know what's a good chat? When you two and Jacob don't say anything. Because we ask a question and it just... The builds on its own, and it just evolves, and it just, the conversation just goes. I love it.
Yeah.
Such a good chat. We do have more news we got to take care of, though. News, reviews. I guess the big news going on is it has been a fucking year for Xbox.
Yeah.
There are talks of studio closures, studios looking to buy themselves away from Xbox, shutdowns. There's talk of the exclusivity games already being non-exclusive. So let's see. Double Fine, Compulsion Games, and Ninja Theory are all looking at either closure, layoffs, or being sold away.
And yeah.
I keep forgetting about Arcane because I can't believe they would actually do that one. Hellblade was announced after the company was already set to be cut. And yeah, apparently they just ran that trailer as hopes for investors to invest in the game. Yeah. Which I think is fucked up.
Yeah, and it's an unrealistic thing to do because we've known there's not a lot of people... who investors for this that aren't already, you know, in this.
Yeah.
So there's not really anyone else to pull the fuck in. So that's sadly not going to help anybody be like, let's see if there's any investors. Let's put this out. No, you have all of the investors. You have it all already. What the fuck are you doing? And we know this because, like, hell, there's stuff going on at Tencent right now, even, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, it looks messy. I'll say no matter what happens with Xbox right now, whether they're exclusive, stay exclusives, whether they do whether they're shutting studios down or selling them off or whatever, I think it's going to be hard for anybody to actually trust Xbox from here on out.
Yeah, and yeah. I had just posted how much I was looking up to Xbox after the shift to the new person leading it. I was finally like, you know what? She's doing great things. I'm actually starting to have faith in this. And then immediately gets torn down. I'm like, no. Why?
Yeah. Well,
we will see in due time what happens. But for now, the only thing we could do is focus on what we know. And what we know is that games are coming to Game Pass.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. June 10th, we got this game called Beatdown City Servivers.
Hmm. Who'd ever heard of that one?
Interesting.
I don't know that one.
June 11th, 33 Immortals hit 1.0 release, so it got achievements. I know a lot of people are excited about that. June 16th, we got Junkster. June 17th, we got Call of Duty Vanguard. And June 18th, we got EA Sports FC 26. Decent week.
Yeah.
June 25th, we are getting Abyssus. I don't know much about that one.
I don't know much about that one, yeah.
June 30th, RV There Yet. I am very excited about this.
That one. I'm excited for, yes.
We're going to have to get together for this one. I legit want to get the four of us together to play this.
That would be
good
fun.
Luck.
Yeah, I know. And then July 6th, Winds of Arcana Ruination.
Yeah. That sounds like that could be an interesting RPG, I assume.
Not too sure. Probably. I don't know. I got to look up more on the games coming. But not all good news. Games got to leave. And there are a bunch that are leaving. Mecha Break is leaving. Payday 2, Rise of the Tomb Raider, Tomb Raider, Slay the Spire, Ultimate Chicken Horse, Unpacking, and Volcano Princess, all leaving Game Pass.
If somehow you've not done Unpacking, it's not a time sink, and it's a fabulous game. Please at least give that one a shot.
Ultimate Chicken Horse is a blast, too.
Yeah.
That's a lot of good stuff leaving. That hurts my feelings.
Oof. Yeah. But, you know, games come in, games go bye-bye. So, anyway, that's all I had for the week. I figured I don't know. The Xbox shit just has me, like, so bummed out with video gaming anymore. Like,
well, there was another Xbox thing where we had two people leaving. Head of studios Craig Duncan announced he was stepping down, and also chief of staff Louise O'Connor left or is leaving as well. So this was like people leaving in addition to all this stuff on the chopping block, which was just kind of interesting post Asha's like Xbox reset speech. So yeah. Nope.
Seems like the reset is going to be a lot more of a reset than people expected.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay.
Aki, what news do you have?
Well, let's just keep the shit train moving. Qualilabs has been laid off. The devs of Luna Abyss that just came out not too long ago, they were all let go already. So, and it's been like a month-ish, if that. I don't even think that. Don't Nod is... Tencent isn't planning on putting any more money into them. And their money is apparently going to run out by November. So...
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, you know, sucks.
Aphelion
so,
apparently didn't do very well, or Aphelion, or however it's supposed to be pronounced.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my news. Just continuing the everything fucking sucks right now train.
Yay!
Oh, one more thing, I guess. Some companies got together, and got some of the EU commission to go to a private little meeting to talk about the Stop Killing Games thing. Yeah, the big, basically, the games group over in the EU invited a lot of the commission people to a private little luncheon right before the votes. Because there's like 10, 12 days, something like that, before the votes happen. So, yay! You know, that's not totally an attempt to fuck over the Stop Killing Games initiative at all. No, totally not. No. So, yeah. There you go. Shit train just keeps on shitting down the tracks.
Fun.
Yeah.
Free news.
So, Xbox news also, maybe positive, maybe negative, depending on your perspective, but they're working on doing some stuff with Klarna and PayPal so that you can pay over time for cost of accessories and games and consoles through Xbox. Buy now, pay later.
They've had it on their store for consoles and stuff. I think the big thing here is that they're doing it for potentially for digital purchases and games.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, if you need that new Fortnite skin, you could pay, you know, 75 cents every month for a year and a half.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings about it. I think it's a nice thing if you wanted to, you know, get a whole cart full of things, or if you need a console all of a sudden. But I actually am bothered a little by the potential interest rates and things that you might incur doing some of these smaller purchases that will add up over time. Yeah. But that's just me. Like, I'm kind of against store cards and things like that for that exact reason, because it gets people trapped.
I'm more worried about the implication of all this. Once you're able, if they implement this, how long until they're like, oh yeah, this game, we need to raise game prices again to, you know, like $100 a game.
Let's not even focus on that, because game prices are going to raise no matter what. Grand Theft Auto is going to cause problems, I'm sure. I wouldn't be shocked if that's a $79.99 game.
Yeah, that's possible.
People are like, it's going to be $100. Yeah, the premium edition will be $100. I don't think the base game will be $100, but
you never know.
I think 80 isn't out of the question. I don't know. We'll see. We shall see.
All right. So my next news is that if you were waiting to get into Dragon's Dogma 2, now may be the time. They're delisting a whole bunch of microtransaction content, as well as the deluxe edition. And then the base game will be getting a permanent discount. Changes take place on June 25th. So do your research and act quick.
Apparently, Sir Khaled is saying on the Xbox Reddit that Boom Boom Rocket may have gotten delisted.
Huh.
360 game.
I don't know what that one is. And then my last bit of news.
Firework exploding game for 360.
Oh, okay. My last bit of news is, of interest to me and mostly me. Custom Seas is now live in Sea of Thieves. You can create your adventures, battle arenas, sandbox mode, do what you want to do, where you want to do it in the custom mode. I started playing a little this morning and it seems to work pretty well. I am still of the feeling that it's a little too late, but I'm still gonna play with it a little bit just to see what's there. So yeah,
very cool.
That's all I got.
One little quick thing, Capcom is celebrating Father's Day with a Pragmata update. They celebrated a 2 million sales milestone shortly after launch. Game has garnered acclaim. And they are releasing a small update, which includes the Scribble suit, which was originally in the game sketchbook demo.
Oh, that's great. I'm so happy for that. That's awesome. That was a cute suit.
This hand-drawn gift from Diana is now available to decorate Hugh's spacesuit during the duo's adventures in the full game.
That's adorable. I still really like that game. That game is amazing. If y'all haven't played that, y'all really need to go play that. It was so fucking cute.
Bree, do you want to play it?
Maybe.
All right, we'll talk. Reviews, should we get into those?
Let's do it.
We only got a couple tonight, so let's blaze through these. First up is Star Seeker Astroneer Expeditions. Developed by System Era Softworks, published by Devolver Digital, released June 11th on Xbox Game Preview Series and PC, and Steam Early Access for $29.99. Join the ESS Starseeker crew to explore strange new worlds, working together with friends to complete planet-wide objectives before the station journeys onto new planetary destinations. Collect and unlock powerful tech to help the crew tackle the perils of space. Bree, what is going on in Starseeker Astroneer Expeditions?
So the first thing I want to emphasize is that this is game preview. The game is still in development. There will be new features, updates, and bug fixes coming. You might also come to unfinished parts of the game, and they do have a Discord community to join and discuss and report things. This is an extraction style game, which is not what I was expecting at all. It really works well with the concept, though. Basically, instead of trying to solve the whole galaxy's problem with energy, you are one of many astroneers that help solve a bigger problem in the universe. You go on small expeditions that last as long as you have oxygen. You need to scan things, collect resources, and extract with as much as you can. Pretty simple. There is a self-directed tutorial that allows you to learn the basics from a robot named JamBX. But first you have to make it to the habitat, which is a good distance away, and your ship just kind of leaves you there with no real idea what you're supposed to do. I eventually figured out some stuff and was able to get to the station and get into some missions. So there's a huge hub spaceport thing that you start from and find all the mission areas you can explore. You get kind of a tutorial mission to help you learn like how and what to do around the station, and then you meet some other mission giver NPCs, and you go on your first expedition to the swamp. I mentioned that missions are only as long as you have oxygen, and that's like 30 to 40 minutes of time, and they give you a good warning as you go to just give you an idea. And even if you do run out of oxygen, you technically still have a short period of time to get out with your goods. As we tested, it injures you rapidly. So you got to time those extractions pretty well. Your character gains levels and reputation levels with different NPCs, and that'll unlock new missions and gear. And speaking of gear, you're going to craft a lot of that out of your resources that you're collecting. There are refiners on the station to convert materials. There's a printer to make like MediMash and Dash mods and the like to improve your movement and success on missions on the planet. You do have a limited stash you can store your resources in the hub because you have an even smaller backpack space in your mission. You'll use your tools to get resin, carbon, and then you can make like rubber on the station. You can build blueprints and the like with your stuff. It's not as much crafting as Astroneer, but if you played Astroneer, like, this is all going to be very familiar to you and come easily. And if you haven't played Astroneer, it's not that complicated. In missions, you can track different objectives like scanning a certain number of plants or animals, or specific plants and animals. There are community goals you can contribute to as well. And I would say this feels even more comedic than the original game, featuring cute little drawings and quirky emotes and jokes. And like, talking to the NPCs is so good. They say the dumbest shit sometimes. It's fabulous. And you have emotes you can do with others, like salutes. There's dances. And with your air blast gun that you have an air blast gun. It's your tool also has an air blast on it once you do your first big mission. And it launches confetti while you're in the hub. But if you point down, you can also use it to launch yourself in the air. And it became my personal mission to make piles of people dancing in the hub. I actually managed to convince random people on a space station to make an 8-pile-high, like, group of dancing astroneers. And that was just stupid fun. And this game is PvE, not PvP. You're all astroneers working towards common goals, whether you're in a squad together or not. People will drop health mash in the hub for low-level players. You can res each other on the maps, in the missions. There's motivation to do that in the achievements as well, but it's still to your benefit most of the time to help your fellow astroneers in mission, because there's things around that you can get help. People can ping different resources that you're looking for. There are monsters you can get help with. And I would say the culture of this game already feels good. As I mentioned, there's enemies in the world, not just sticky plants that grab you. Now there's bog creatures that'll attack, and you don't really have a real gun. You just have the air blast to like stun them. You can also subdue them using a button afterward and harvest like feathers and things after you stun them with your gun. And this is a huge change from Astroneer. There's climbing and mantling now, instead of having to terraform your way out of a hole that you probably made. I mentioned earlier running out of oxygen. Bleh. You can no longer place nodes for oxygen to extend your journey. You're limited to the size of your backpack instead. And that simplifies things a bit and lets you focus on just the quick gathering of specific resources and exploring different parts of the planet. It's pretty fun. Settings right when you start are for things like color saturation, color blindness settings. You could invert sticks, but nothing too fancy that you need to worry about changing settings on. The art is brightly colored. It's cartoony. It's like Astroneer, but a bit more refined. The music is well balanced to play experience. The audio scape for the station's pretty spacey. I mean, you know, it's kind of what you would expect. But it's not like, you know, really jazzy tunes in the background that kind of take you out of things. It's kind of just, it's all there and it kind of just fits. And again, as this was a game preview, the person I was playing with and I both ran into some bugginess with things like multiplayer connections, things like that. Nothing major, though. I had a blast with this, and I think others will, too.
Very cool. Well, it is in game preview, so we can't give it an official verdict yet. But it clocks in right now at $30. Is this something that people should wish list, follow, ignore? Should they jump in on it now at $30? Should they keep an eye on it and see what comes in the future? What are your thoughts on Star Seeker?
All right, so first of all, you can totally play this without having played Astroneer. I kind of mentioned that earlier, but you'd be missing some of the lore and early expectations of what you can and should do. There is a free trial of the game. It's available on Game Pass Ultimate if you want to check that out for yourself and you're on Xbox. I think the starting price is reasonable, and the Founders Pack gives you some cool cosmetics and helps support the future development of the game. I think if you liked Astroneer, you should check this out. It's familiar but different. I had a blast playing with friends. If you're new to extraction-style games, I think this is a way to ease into the concept, and the community seems really good playing this game right now. It's got a little cosmic mischief, comic mischief, mild violence, but I could still see this as a family fun game, even though that would, like, I think it would just appeal to various age groups in your family unit. That's what I'm trying to say. So I could see this as a family game as well. And if I were to give this a verdict, I would say probably I would be leaning toward a buy it. I think that if you have the opportunity to check it out, check it out. And if you have the opportunity to support the devs with the Founders Pack or something, I think this is a great price for it. So, yeah.
Very good. Next up, Crushed in Time, developed and published by Draw Me a Pixel, released June 10th on Steam for $24.99. Embark on an adventure with Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson on this surprising, elastic point-and-click game. Grab a pull, release, and help them solve a bizarre investigation full of humor and meta-time travel. Aki, what is Crushed in Time?
Okay, so, and this is following Sherlock and Watson, and you are playing as a disembodied hand that they can't see. You're in a video game. So starts off with everyone in the team talking about the video game. They're having some issue with, I don't know if it's the Sherlock Holmes games or some other game, but they all run off, and then you're zoomed in on the computer screen and you start the game. So once you get into the world, you start playing through their little adventure, and their adventure, there's someone in there that actually understands that this is a video game. And they have a device that allows them to travel through the different versions of the game. So, like, the 1.0, the Alpha 0.1, pre-Alpha. You get to travel through all these different timelines of the game, as well as through actual time to see what the game would be like as different types of games, even in one level. So, like, they go back to, like, the old handheld games that I didn't really have any pixels. Instead, there were little lights on the screen that were filled in. So yeah, you originally start because you guys get a letter and it's from a woman basically talking about how she misses Watson and wants to see him. And Watson's like, I have no idea who the hell this is. So let's go figure out who this is. And then from there, the two of them meet this individual who understands this is all a video game whilst trying to look for her. And they end up getting pulled into this, you know, going through the different timelines and stuff. And in this, Sherlock is not the genius that you might expect from Sherlock games and every other piece of Sherlock media that has ever existed in the history of ever. Instead, he is a bumbling buffoon in this. And instead, he just takes credit for everything that goes well. And you're playing this disembodied hand. You can interact with the world and with the characters on occasion. And you can hover over things and there'll be a little dot that tells you, oh, you can interact with this. And you hold and click on that dot and you can drag it around. Sometimes the items will actually move, but most of the time you have to drag it in a certain direction to flick it off in the other direction, basically. So think you're pulling an elastic band and releasing. It goes the other direction. That is how this entire game plays, including the menus. You have to grab the menu button, pull it, and let go for it to flick and open the different menus. Still, even as much as I've played it, is still very awkward to use sometimes. And you're solving puzzles by doing this. You know, if you need to open a door, you grab, drag, and flick. So it's a nice, simple concept, but because this is all based inside a video game, so that you're not treating this like you're a disembodied hand basically guiding real people to things like you do in most of these style games. Instead, this is very much in a video game, so there are points where it's like, okay, I'm going to go into this menu and change some values and stuff in this, and it'll allow me to move forward in the game. Like, oh, there's a section that's like, oh, Sherlock can't get this thing done, but we've managed to break a hole in this wall. He can look in it, which allows us access into this room. And it's all like programming language and stuff. So you have if and statements and things like that. So you have to change it to where the game registers Sherlock as the detective, and you're going through all these names of all these other famous detectives, like H. Poirot, Hercule from the Agatha Christie games, or nice. Yeah, it goes through like a whole bunch of them. I don't even know all of them. I knew most of them. Like, there was Nancy Drew was in it and stuff like that. It was a really nice little like homage to all of them, just to see all their names. And you have to bring it to where it's his name. And then that unlocks another section where you get to change time. And you have to get back to this other menu before that time runs out to open this next pathway and stuff like that. Which is really cool, but a lot of the game is, you know, dealing with just dragging stuff and flicking it around to figure out how things move in the level to get what you want done. I've gotten to a point in the game, I'm around halfway-ish, where we've gone through a whole bunch of different versions of the game, and now we're at the editing stage of the game, and you have to figure out how to set things up. And you're actually editing stuff. So you, like, see, like, all the different line work and stuff for this to be, like, making a video or something. And I have not, for the life of me, understood how to do this part correctly, because I don't really get this. but it is so fun just to fuck with things, because you're constantly just trying stuff and seeing how things work. And then having to figure out how to piece together different things. And some of it is timed-based. So, like, you might need someone to turn and look, but they'll only turn and look for a little while. So you have to do something, get a ball rolling a little bit, and then get them to turn so they see the whatever it's doing so they'll interact with it. And it's been really fun. Also, you meet this character that sent the letter to Watson pretty early on. And she's hilarious. I absolutely adore this lady because she's nice and prim and proper based on ye olden days. And then, you know, she is very infatuated with Watson. And then Sherlock will say something and he just keeps poking the bear. And you occasionally just see her, like, flip out. Her model changes and stuff and she starts, like, screaming and yelling at him. It's so good. I love it.
Sounds like you enjoyed this one a little.
Yeah. Yeah, I need a walkthrough to help me with some of the stuff in here. So I really can't wait for that to come out. Because I am not smart enough for all this on my own. But man, this has been so enjoyable. It is such an interesting take on point-and-click adventures to turn it into a click-and-drag, I guess we'll call it, adventure. That has changed a surprisingly large amount of the game, and it has been very interesting. I would even go so far to say the word that I hate saying, this is a unique game. Ugh, I hate that word, but it is, and I thoroughly love it. Sometimes it fits. Yeah, usually it doesn't, but sometimes it does.
Well, this one runs $25. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm 100% for this. I can't imagine there's anyone who's not going to enjoy this game. That's how good this is. I think it's a buy for everybody.
Very good. All right. Next game to talk about. Bro, do you even forklift? Developed by Garage 5, published by Take It Studio, released May 28th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $7.99. When all you have is a forklift, everything looks like a pallet. Take a flight to Ghibli-style Japan. Let your forklift loose on a peaceful prefecture. Maybe they'll show you how to cook ramen. Of course, using a forklift. Bree, Aki, both of you played Do You Even Forklift? And Bree, we'll start with you. Bree, yeah. Do you even forklift?
I do now. This is a game about driving a forklift and getting to your parking space. It's more of a puzzle game than anything. There are some, you know, physics to it. There is an overmap with different levels on it and also hidden cats. Allow me to ramble for a moment. I found one right away between levels 1 and 2, and I tried to pet it with my forklift. I sort of ran over the cat, but he jumped on the top, and I got credit for finishing one of the levels with the cat. Each level also has a ramen bowl to find. You can usually tell where it is from the steam. Basically, for the achievement completion of the game on Xbox, you'll have to do all the levels with a cat and pick up the ramen. There are usually cats nearby you can take into each level and complete. You just have to remember to pick one up, and then the ramen is in every level. I enjoyed that element so much, it was silly.
You enjoying something with cats?
I know, right?
What?
I find it amusing that I was like, how do I pet a cat with a forklift? That was legitimately a thought that went through my head. Some levels want you to park your forklift. Others, a specific other thing in the spot. You might need to get like a certain color car in a certain spot. You might need to paint a car to make that happen. Sometimes you have to get through gates that require certain color of cars, and that adds to the puzzle in terms of things you need to, like, wiggle around. There are cars with alarms you can only bump so many times, or you might get busted. And so in my head, you're not doing this forklift journey for any other reason than to cause chaos and not get caught.
Yep, 100%. At least that's how I played it.
Yeah, pretty much. There's electric cars that are attached with cables, and their chargers will need you to move them. You need to move them so that the cables don't break. Sometimes you have to throw things in a water or things on top of things. You might need to stack vehicles to complete the objective, or just make it easier on yourself to juggle things around, because ultimately you're in a tight space with a couple of parking spots. Like, some destructibles, you've got some streetlights and tables and things, but it's a small space you have to navigate, and sometimes there's a lot of stuff.
Also, there's no limit to how high you can stack things on things.
Awesome. I mean, I figure you can stack them as high as you can lift your forklift.
You can stack something on something and then pick up the thing that's on the bottom and lift all of it. And you can just keep stacking that way. So you can stack everything on a level if you really want to.
It's like things on my cat.com, but things on my, or cars on my car.com. Yeah, anyway. Sometimes the objectives were not super clear. I have to admit it took me way too long to figure out that the fire trucks just wanted me to move the car out of the hydrant spot and be on my way, for example.
I got stuck there for a while too.
Yeah. There's just a car and two fire trucks and a forklift parking spot. But underneath the car is an X and it's next to that hydrant. So like eventually I got that I needed to move that car and get to my parking spot to make the fire trucks happy. There's way too much story to that one level. The controls were exactly what I expected. Accelerating and reversing on the triggers, A to lift and throw, bumpers move the lift up and down. And of course, you have to like back up with the wheels in the correct direction, which may be a challenge for some people.
It was a problem for me, especially in later levels. I kept screwing it up. I was like, no, yeah. I'm trying to back in at this angle. And I would correct it, and I had to move forward some so I could back up. And I'd screw it up again. I'd be like, damn it, let's move forward. And I'd screw that up. And I would just, instead of moving further in, I was moving further out. And I'm like, fuck, I'm bad.
I will say there was one nice thing that I appreciated, which is beyond resetting the level, there is on the pause menu a way to just reset your forklift. So if you just get jammed in between two things and you can no longer get out, do not reset the level. You might be able to keep your things stacked in the corner and just reset your forklift to the beginning and go on about your business.
I didn't know that's what that did. I thought that reset the level too.
Shit. Nope. It just resets your forklift. Yeah, it makes it a lot easier. And it'll keep, if you hit reset forklift and you have a cat on you, it'll keep the cat too.
That's great, because restarting the level doesn't always do that. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
Yes. The music was some chill lo-fi beats. So the art style was soft with like pastel wash for most of the background colors. And I think there's like 65 levels to conquer with a cat on the back, all while collecting some ramen on your way to the big soup pot at the end for the credits.
Yep.
The names of places on the maps are related to food. I'm thinking the devs were hungry when they made this.
Would be my guess. There is something you do need to be aware of when you're playing this. In some of the later levels, you can mess up so bad that you can't win the game, but the game will not tell you that you've made it impossible to win. So be prepared for that. Yeah, there are some levels, as we said, you need certain colored cars and stuff. And there's some of those levels are also where you can just dump cars off into the ocean because they're in your way. You can just dump all the cars and not have any car left to park in those spots. The game will not tell you Yugon did fucked up, but Yugon did fucked up.
Okay.
So make sure you're paying attention to what you're doing. I don't think that's really going to be a major concern, but I did do that for a while. And I was trying to figure out why I couldn't finish the level, and it's because it was one of them where you had to set an item, not a car, down somewhere, and I had tossed all the items off the level to empty the spot for me to make life nice and easy to move a car there. And I was like, oh. Once I figured that out, I was like, oh, I'm just stupid. Okay.
You were like,
yep, basically. Because I sat there for like 30 minutes trying to figure out what I was doing wrong. I'm like, it doesn't say it needs a specific color car. And I put a car there. I moved the car. I tried to park there. I'm like, what am I doing wrong? It took me so long to figure it out. Because it doesn't tell you when it needs a car or an item. You just have to figure that out. And you do figure it out eventually. But it took me a long while. I was so upset because I didn't even, at that point, I didn't realize that they ever wanted that stuff. I was just like, this shit's in my way. Let's throw it off the level.
Beautiful. Well, let's talk price on this one. It seems like you two had a good time with this one. It clocks in at only $7.99. This is a pretty cheap one. What do you two think of Do You Even Forklift at $8?
I think some of the elements are kind of goofy with this game, but somehow it works. I think the level design progression was good, building on the previous elements as you go. I think the price is great for a chill and interesting puzzle game with, like, just enough challenge. I would give this a buy it.
I think this is a fantastically cute, extremely cheap little game. I am 100% for this. This price is super cheap. You can definitely go get this.
Very good. One last game. Preview of Mistfall Hunter Open Beta, developed by Bellring Games, published by Skystone Games. It's releasing July 29th as an Xbox Play Anywhere title, PS5 and PC. Mistfall Hunter is a dark fantasy extraction ARPG. Combines skills, talents, and gear for each class in thrilling combat. Whether you team up or go solo, one thing remains certain. Only by fighting your way through can you return with a full haul. Good luck, Guild Hunter. Aki, what's going on in the open beta for Mistfall Hunter?
Okay, so this is an extraction game, and I got super excited because I like extraction games. And, yeah, you get to pull in, you get to choose what kind of character you want. There's, like, 6 or 7 different classes. Most of them are sword-based. I think there's 1, maybe 2 that are magic-based. And then you get to choose whether you're a guy or a girl. You get to do a custom character. They all look really good, and I made my character look really hot, and she has a big buck-off-size sword, so I really like her. And then you're put into a tutorial level, and in this, you're fighting a bunch of semi-skeletal-ish creatures. I don't want to quite call them zombies or skeletons. There's something slightly different from both of those. And you're basically just following this talking bird that's like, hey, yeah, go over here and just survive. And he also explains how to do some of the mechanics in the game and stuff like that. And then you get ambushed by a boss creature at the end of it, and it fucks your shit up real bad, and then it disappears, and you don't have to fight it. Yay! Because I would have lost.
Proud of you. And
yeah, the great thing about this is if you die, you get to come back as, like, a ghost-like thing, and then you don't come back exactly where you died. You come back a little bit away from it, from where you died, and you can run back and get to your body and revive yourself one time in each level. And then you, if you fuck up again, you get kicked back to your home base, basically. And yeah, so after you finish the tutorial level, you're brought to your home base, which is where you get different missions, as well as you can buy gear. The store actually does cycle through just randomized stuff that costs different prices. There's, I believe, going to be an upgrade area. I haven't unlocked the ability to upgrade my gear, or maybe it's just to repair the durability, because everything has durability in this game. It's not, oh, you use it, so it took damage. It's, no, you used it in a level, you got out of the level, or you died in the level, whatever. It has taken damage. So it's not like you're not going to go in with like a 100% durable item, and by the end of the level, you're running around in your underwear with no weapons. You're not going to have to worry about that. Instead, it'll take like 10, 20%, whatever, of the durability away when you get back. But while you're in the level, it's 100%. Whatever your current durability is, just stays there. And it doesn't seem to like, your weapons don't seem to do less damage as it gets less durable. Your armor doesn't seem to allow you to get hurt more the less durable it is. It's just you need to occasionally buy new gear, which, thank fuck for that, because otherwise that would be extremely annoying. It's still not super great if you get like high-end gear, because you probably aren't going to be able to buy that. You have to find that level, and that's kind of a pain in the ass sometimes. Once you get here, though, there's going to be something nice and big that's going to be very irritating for some of you. Some of you are the people that irritate me. You get a giant global chat box front and center once you get into your home base. And there's already problems with it. Already at this point, there are already problems with that. I got in there from finishing the tutorial, and the first thing I saw was someone trying to get people to go to a website to get free in-game currency. So they were trying to steal people's information. I saw a whole bunch about people being gay and BBCs and stuff like that. And there's no way to turn off the global chat. It just anytime
they
someone
knew
posts
you were gay?
They didn't know I was, but they were pretty sure other people were for sure. I was just like, God, I really would prefer just to turn this chat off and never see this shit again. Because there's not enough bleach for my eyes, and you can't, which kind of sucks. And then you get missions, and you go into a map. In this build, there's only two maps, and you have to level up a bunch before you get access to the second map. However, the maps are pretty sizable, and you only have like 20 minutes that you can be in a level, because after 20 minutes, it's no longer safe, and this mist starts coming in, and you have to get away from it, because if you're in it, it does a lot of damage very quickly. Think any of the, like, think PUBG, how the map gets smaller. That's basically what's happening here. So I always got in, was there for less than 20 minutes and got out. I never went outside the safe zone, because in this, you can have up to three people, yourself being one of them, on your team. There are other people in these levels, too. And griefing is already a thing.
Of course it is.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing when you make it a PvE game. I thought this was just a PvE, and I was super excited, and it turned out to be a PvPvE. So, like, the very first one I went into, I was right off the bat, I saw a chest. I was like, oh, cool. I walked up, killed an enemy that was next to the chest. It was an AI bad guy. It was fine. I opened the chest, and I was in there just looking at what was in it, tossing things into my inventory, and I got attacked. And I was like, what the hell monster was there? And it was another player trying to beat the shit out of me. I was like, I didn't attack you. Please don't. And they did not care. And then they learned that you shouldn't do that, because I killed the shit out of them. Yeah, and that happened to me like three different times. So I was like, whilst I have successfully defended myself each one of these times, I don't particularly like that in my games. So I don't know if the devs can even do this at this point, but if there was a way to like turn it to where it's just co-op, and you have just the AI enemies, and you're not fighting other people, that would be nice, just to be able to turn that on to where you can't hurt other players, but they also can't hurt you type thing. Would be nice, just because there's some people who just, like, this is a really interesting thing to run around in. This, the map's huge, and every time you spawn in at a random area, and it's interesting, because it has a whole bunch of different types of enemies, and every area is clearly made for a different type of player, or players at different levels, even. Because, you know, you got, like, rogues that are super fast and stuff, and there are fast enemies, and I was playing a big behemoth slow person, so it's like, that area, not for me quite at this level. Maybe when I get higher leveled and have better gear, that area will also be for me and stuff. So it's interesting to see all these places, but then there's other players that are just there to watch your world burn, and that kind of isn't super fun.
It's also like Clerks, where they're like, this job would be so much better if it weren't for the fucking customers.
Exactly. There is also one other weird thing that I don't particularly like. It's, you can't look on to enemies. And that doesn't sound like a big problem, but all of you have a base attack, and then you have your combos and special attacks and stuff that take up stamina or magic if you're one of the magic casters. And some of them are multi-hit attacks. you can hit them with the first attack and then whiff all the other ones in this multi-thing attack. And the game's like, well, you know, you used the button, so it took that much energy, and now you can't use this attack again for this many seconds. It's like, I hit nothing with that because there's no lock on. So I would like to see them add like a lock on, even if it can't be done to other players. Understandable, I guess. But at least for the base enemies, just so, because there's abilities that are like, oh yeah, if it hits, if you hit the enemy with the last part of this combo, it does a lot of damage.
But only I'm not likely to connect. Hit
them.
Yeah,
exactly. You're likely to hit them with the first attack. All of them after that, very questionable. So I would like a lock on that would keep you attacking an enemy, just to make those abilities a little more functional. But as is, it's a pretty fun game. There are bosses, and at low levels you don't want to go fight them because they're gonna wreck your shit.
It's a beta, you don't want to do that shit yet. Let's get to the point of this one. The game comes out July 29th. It is a little over a month away. Is this something people should have on their wish list? Should people be pre-ordering this one? Should we wait until it launches to see how things go? What are your thoughts on your time with the beta?
Realistically, the only people I think that are going to be really into this game are people who like Soulsborne games, because it has very much the same style of combat. You have to dodge enemy attacks and then get in, get a couple hits, dodge out of the way again, because otherwise you're just going to get wrecked. So if you like Soulsborne games, I'm pretty sure this should be a wish list for you. If you like extraction games, but you're not quite as big on Soulsborne, maybe keep an eye on it. Everyone else, I don't think this is probably going to be for you, sadly.
Gotcha. All right, and with that, we're done. Big thanks to Sean for coming on, hanging out with us for the first big chunk of the show. Really fun chat. Beatdown City Survivors is out now on Steam and on Xbox. Play anywhere. $10, Game Pass. Check it out. Big thanks to you two for being here. Big thanks to Jacob for doing his thing. Music. I'm going to see if I could find something from the Beatdown City Survivor soundtrack to play.
Nice. Sounds good.
Does anyone have any final words to wrap this up?
Nope.
Okay, fine. Fuck you then.
It's all blind eyes, white noise, and exit stage right. How could men have heart problems with lifting broken wings high enough to pretend they gave flight? These figures cast a slide in and out of a human chest like a proper monster. All right, waters of blood so we can warp against that blade. Well, I'm about to beach Hollywood is landslides and addictions telling me the same lies. Blue collar, yeah, blue collar, Midwestern illusion that invested, and colluded to knock down my hometown landmarks. He shakes medicine and sings the blues to it. Burns bridges, gates, telemodal echoes in a larger man. Anxiety, yeah, how to find she ain't poking her neck to read. Dog poison the skyline. I was thinking about a dream I had in it. I made a promise that might end it. Not pretending to remember what it was, but it left the breath standing. Let's run up to many smiles reminded me of the wrong woman. In a disco default generation, manic pixie dream girl. Magic and ego kings rule, everyday puzzle, not tired, drain like. Here comes fireworks for the pain life. Had found a smirk, immortalized the stained glass. The train passed, he begged for the same life. He lost when he found God in gang ties. Our nephews made songs about it. The parents didn't write the wrongs about it. And I was drinking with them, victims of the human condition. So Castro, did I go hard enough? Tomorrow Kings, did I go hard enough? Tomorrow Kings, yo Afro, did I go hard enough? Yo Riff, did I go hard enough? Did I go? Yo Lamar, did I go hard enough? Did I go? David C, did I go hard enough? David C, yo Quack, did I go hard enough? Yo Jeff, did I go hard enough? Did I go? Praise the Lord, raise plow, euphemism for euthanasia, somatic camouflage for modern Nazis, holidays for human labor. Sage the way around the candles, and then the biocality was wrong. This fact made a big pitiable. The smarter man who's the savior, drowned in his own assuriness, even when he could use a savior. Feels like the field stills for the halogenic romance I once witnessed between the cinematic overachiever and the subject for the evening. So two circle catcher releasing, he gesticulates, she found freedom in his leisure. River danced to the speaker, took a shot, spent the night placing gold leaves on a weakness. I saw half of him waiting to get on stage. Feel like I was wearing an armor scar tissue, but it was just my cynicism. So I guess 'tis the season I meet all Chicago crime questions with Dusabo information. Does not feel suitable in your voice to make that statement. The headlines have birthdays before they became your entertainment. When the call penetrates, you feel the sickest sensation. He got closer to God, standing on the train station. He got closer to God, stalled at the expressway, and she got closer to God, turning a bedroom into a pain check. These hands will smack the fuck out of one of my idols if they disrespect me and mine. You have not been lied to. I am my parents' child. Willie Cotton died of a heart attack in a cotton factory. I watched this bastard seeds figure out emotions at his funeral, and this is what you stayed for. This slice of life, a beautiful homecoming for a quiet man, his grandson describing it on a rooftop under the weight of another summer. I believe that brings you up to speed. My family calls me chill.